like to welcome other guests, media internet, and also welcome our support staff. And thank you for your presence. I see there is also the Parliamentary Budget Office. Thank you for your presence here today. We are meeting today the other arm of National Treasury, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. They are going to make a presentation to the Standing Committee on Appropriations on progress regarding its efficiency drives and as contained in the 2016 budget review. So before we get into the presentation, let me just once again indicate the standing apology for Honorable Minister Nyalungu, who is unwell. I'm not aware of any other apologies, and the Secretariat also is not aware of any other apologies, unless members do have other apologies which you might not be aware of. Sheikh Imam has reported that he will be joining us late. Now let's go straight to the presentation, but before the presentation, I'd like the Chief Procurement Officer, Mr. Kenneth Brown, to introduce his team. Because we're meeting for the first time, we would like to know exactly who is here and what position we are holding, so that from there we then can we know then who we are deliberating with. But I'd also like members to introduce themselves so that the officials know who you are. And I will remind them as you ask your questions, as I repeat your names, so that they know who asked what. Let me start with the members first.
Good morning. I am Tony the Mandana from Kupanaka.
On your mic.
I am Sibongile the Mandana, a member of this committee. I'm from Mpumalanga. Thank you.
Morning, my name is Eliwe Madlopa from Kwazulu Natal, a member of this committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Natasha Sangweni. I'm a member of the EFF and also a member of this committee.
Morning, my name is Malcolm Fink. I'm a member of the Appropriations Committee.
Morning, Alan McLaughlin. I'm also a member of the Appropriations Committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Doris Sinokwanyan, member of the committee.
And I am Dava Twabaza, member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations and acting chairperson. Over to you.
Thank you. Good morning to you, Chair, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity to allow my office to just come and present the work that they've been doing for the past 2.5 to 3 years to the committee. I will quickly maybe just run through the team that's basically, and the reason why I brought them so that people don't think that the one-man show is just Canada's running the show. Actually, these are the people behind the good work that's actually happening out there.
We've got Tumelo Ntari, the director. He's the person who's responsible for the set supply database. He will actually do a virtual demonstration on how it works. Next to him is Malaka Matulong. Malaka is also responsible for the ICT part and automation, but he's focusing on local government. So he has visited a number of municipalities already, and he will give an idea later on that. Then we've got Rakhadi Moteto. She's the chief director responsible for stakeholder and client management there. Research has told us that if we interact with all of our stakeholders, whether it's internal within government or externally, that we can improve supply chain by close to 20%, just talking rest of business or rest of the people. And that is her job. Next to her is Stel Setan. She's responsible for strategic sourcing. The concept of not all tenders need to go out the same way. And she will explain how that works. Next to the Stel is Kenneth Pillay. Kenneth is the Chief Director responsible for transversal contracting. That's where centralization actually happens. You were talking a bit of detail around that. And then you've got a character there from Mpumalanga, he's also from Limpopo, Soil Chitangano. He is the Chief Director responsible for governance, monitoring, and compliance tests. That is basically the heartbeat of my office. One gentleman who's not here, Skal Kuman, he's the Chief Director, responsible for, now he is responsible for ICT and automation, but he's also taking care of policy. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it. He must testify in court on a 20 million rand fraud case. So he can't make it today. Thanks. Can I just get to the presentation, sir?
Okay. Yes. So shortly before that, there is also Thembekile Plaatjes, the parliamentary liaison officer. I see that two hands from the members. Honorable Natasha Law and Honorable Fiji after her.
Thank you, Chair. I think yet again, we are disappointed again. We had a problem yesterday whereby presentations are coming late from National Treasury. And this doesn't make it right. It can't be allowed that we, on such short notice, we are put with presentations before us that we have to deliberate on, and we are receiving information completely late. I think we need to take further steps, because to just get an apology and add the same thing progress, and every time it's the same thing, and we get the same apology, so apology won't don't cut it for play. So I think further steps need to be taken by this committee as to why National Treasury want to undermine our committee and forever send information late, and then we are expected to deliberate on the presentation. It's totally not right what they are doing. So I think, Chair, as this committee, we need to make a decision on what we our next step is going to be on National Treasury sending us information this late in the day. Thank you.
Honourable Vic.
Yes, Honourable Chair, thank you for that. I've got the same concern, and it's becoming problematic now, because the information is with HLE, and for us to be effective and do our own side properly, we really need to have the presentation in time. And it's not as though they weren't informed. I mean, the letter specifically states that the presentation should have been there by Friday the 8th. So why are you not receiving it? And I'm hoping that the same is not going to happen that happened yesterday, where we got an apology and said, okay, well, we're sorry, because I'm afraid, you know, an apology is just not going to be enough anymore. It's important information. This is an important new committee or new function. So therefore, we need to make sure that when it's presented information, we can analyze to see if what is being told is exactly what we wanted, because we need this information to use to go and do our oversight for properly. So I agree with the Honourable Law that we need to take a stance now once and for all, because. And maybe what was suggested yesterday was that perhaps then we should say that we don't continue with the meeting, and we have the presentation on a date so that we can analyze the information before it's presented to us, because honestly, it can't be acceptable. Thank you. Sorry, just one more question here as well as, can we've got a list of directors. Could the Chief Procurement Officer also inform us, are these the only directors, or what is the total number of directors in this the procurement office, please?
Oh, okay. I think that this speaks to your total structure, human resource structure. Honorable Sheila Shopetole.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want a treasurer to note that we are not just being fussy. Our work as members of parliament has to take on board communities, public participation. It becomes very difficult if we get the documents here and now. When are we going to discuss the documents with our constituencies? So, for us to be effective as this committee, we need to be supported by yourself. You give us information on time so that we can read, research, engage communities. It is only then, when Parliament is able to take communities on board, that South Africans will feel as part of this institution. And it is incumbent upon us to make sure and double sure that it happens in that manner, because it's not a question of options, it is an obligation on Parliament to do that by the Constitution. So please, we need information on time. It is not just a ritual. We don't like this thing that has been going on, people just coming, appearing before the committee. No, we must give meaning to policy making. Thank you.
Okay. The matter was, yes, Honorable Bongile Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As you were indicating that this matter was raised yesterday with the DDG from Treasury, that are not happy about the manner in which they are handling things. I think we need to elevate this matter to the DG and the minister to indicate to them that as this committee, we are not happy that we are supposed to get a presentation on the same day. Thank you.
Honorable Natasha Law.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to make a proposal, Chair, and put it to the floor. I think, you know what, Chair, and we have made a proposal yesterday, and I'm going back to that proposal. And in order for us, as National Treasury, to see that we are serious about what we are saying, this committee and this meeting shouldn't continue. And National Treasury must take the cost and liable for the cost of this of this meeting. Because I think because this is every time that we are in a meeting with them and they are sending documents late. So then somehow something is not working, or they are taking us for granted. So I think that is my proposal, Chair. It's open to the floor for other members, but I don't think that the meeting should continue, because yesterday we discussed billions of rents. We couldn't go and cross-check it, and then today is going to be the same thing. We can't cross-check information whether the figures that they are giving us is correct. And I'm not going to take information yesterday and take it as truth. We need to cross-check information. So I really think, Chair, that this meeting should postpone it. They need to go back and be held liable and sent a letter to the minister. And certain people, it's about time people are taking the work seriously and take this committee seriously, because they are counting to us. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Shekima.
Thank you, Chair. We apologize officially for being a few minutes late. Chair. Yeah, whilst I must express my concern about documentation not coming, I think we deliberated on this issue yesterday. But at the same time, I think if we wait to council's meeting, there are cost implications, and we're trying to save. It's not going to serve the intended purpose. And what I would suggest is that we continue with the meeting, but we inform Treasury and the DG, if you want to, that this is not acceptable, that in future, if no documentation has been received by us previously, we will either not schedule a meeting, or alternatively, members then must be personally liable for any cost that may be incurred as a result of their non-compliance. But I think for today, let's continue with the meeting because there are serious cost implications. And whilst I agree with my colleague and I can understand being upset about what is going on, because you cannot really deliberate if you don't have information on time. You need to go to it. So you can come and make a positive contribution to this meeting. But at the same time, I think for today, and I think we have extensively covered this yesterday as well, and so let's rather ask Treasury to please comply and assist us by giving this to us timely in future. And they must understand today that should this not happen, or should they now default again, that this is the route we are going to go. We're going to cancel it, and they must be liable and responsible. Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Honourable Member, let me again plead with you that we continue with the meeting, notwithstanding the concerns, very genuine concerns that you've raised. Very difficult to deliberate meaningfully when you have not been able to access information on time. I do really want to plead with you to accept the suggestion that we continue with the meeting, but take the issues up with the Minister and the DG, as has been suggested. And in fact, I hear an additional suggestion which says, should we not receive the information on time as requested, we should then consider cancelling the meeting, rescheduling the meeting, so that officials don't fly to Cape Town and then just fly back without them having performed their duties. You must also understand that when members of the committee sit, there are internal costs that are being incurred as well. and we don't want a situation where either the department or parliament incur costs that would be described as fruitless. So we hope that you are taking serious note of what members are saying. We said this yesterday when we met National Treasury to the state, the same thing. So we just hope that when we next meet, schedule a meeting, this won't happen. Honourable members, I've just made a plea. I don't know whether that is acceptable to members. Honourable Hick.
Yeah, see, at this point in time, I'm not so sure which side I'm going to support here. But see, it's simple. I know you raised the point of that they're going to fly down for nothing. That's not going to happen because it's simple. When they get a letter, there is a date on the letter that is stipulated as to when the presentation must be here. So it's simple. If the presentation is not with us on the date, then they just don't have to fly down. It's just simple as that. So there's not going to be any wasteful expenditure. So I think that's the way we must deal with this issue.
I see another hand. No.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. You know, it's difficult even to talk because we sound like a bad record to say we need information on time, you know, so that we do our research. You know, they will just do a presentation, you just listen to them, because we haven't read these documents. We must not be treated as people just give to them as if they will give us the information. We must not engage on the information. Really, we are not happy about the way they are doing the treasury. Even yesterday we were saying, next time when treasury come, and we don't have an information, we are not going to continue. But if we made a request as a committee to say that day to request the presentation, they must indicate if they are not ready. They must not accept. And then hence they come, we get the information now, you know. So, but because Chair, you are saying they are pleading with us, we take it, but really next time I don't think we'll take it. Because when they, in the first place I wanted to support the first person, it was saying no. But because Chair, you are making a plea to us as a committee and it's the first time for us to meet with them, I think next time they won't do that because this is the first time for them to come to us. They are sitting on those spaces. But really we are not able. Thanks.
Honourable members, let us try and make sense of what is going to be said to us and engage as much as is possible under the circumstances. Agreed? Thank you very much. Let me hand over to you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Member. And really, let me use this opportunity to apologize. And in my case, it is my responsibility to make sure things are on time, and I take the flak for it. The team has prepared a lot of this work already early, and I take full responsibility for that. And I also hasten to say that this will be the last time that information will be laid to you. I can guarantee you that to you. If it so happened that in future, and it's recorded there, that the information coming from my office is late, I'm prepared to resign. That's how serious I take your comments. Honourable members, thank you very much for considering this positively. Now, honourable members, just on the first slide, this office is. Before I get to that, there was a question about how many directors we have about the structure. Honourable Mr. Fick. The staff complement of the CPO is about 125, and we've, I think the last count we've got over 80 health positions. We've got 6 chief directors, and we've got 13 directors. What we're trying to do is to keep the structure fairly lean, to save costs, but also to try and recruit quite a bit of expertise. And what we will do, because this is quite a bit of a specialized field, we want to actually recruit industry specialists as we need them to do specific research work for that. And as we go through the presentation, you'll see later on why we have that particular kind of approach. But it will be great to hear your feedback when we go out on that. Okay. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Now, the office actually in existence exactly 3 years. The first 6 months to a year of its existence, we did quite a bit of research so that we actually understand what the supply chain management environment actually entails. And out of that, in 2015, January last year, we released the 2015 Supply Chain Management Review, which was actually extensively researched, where we spoke to all of government departments, we spoke to all provinces, entities, we had conversations with business, and here we're talking the broader spectrum actually of business. And what is contained actually in the review, which was circulated to Parliament last year, was a detailed synopsis actually of the challenges that are faced with. The focus of the office, initially people said deal with corruption, but we said no, look here, maybe we must rather focus on why we deal with corruption, how do we focus on making transacting fairly easy, and the review actually in detail highlights that, and it provides us with a roadmap. And what we will be presenting today to you is the progress that we have made in all the particular areas. Now, the office is divided actually into those particular six areas, as policy and legal. That's where all the instructionals are, the legislation like the proper PFA, etc. That's where it is basically located. That's where the research around the legal environment basically happens. Then the second one is governance, monitoring, and compliance, which is headed up by Solly. So we monitoring basically the entire system, whether people are actually implementing supply chain in line with our prescripts. Then we've got transversal contracts, which are essentially negotiated contracts. So what we do is we look at what goods are commonly used by the state in some cases. Let's take education. You're going to see the textbook and stationery is commonly used. And then what we'll do, we'll put a central contract for that, for example, together. Then strategic sourcing, as well later on, we'll talk a bit around that, is basically getting into the data of all of the commodities that government actually uses, services that they use. And out of that, basically, they propose procurement strategies for them. Some will be sole sourcing, some will be going on closed tenders, some will be open bidding. In some cases, you negotiate, and there you go. So that's the research would inform your strategy that you will actually have to follow. Then SCM ICT is actually the entire environment for automation. Currently, our system is too much paper-based. And what we're doing with our automation now is that how do we reduce paper, but at the same time, how do we also reduce manipulation in the system. We'll talk about that. And then you've got SM stakeholders and client management. Our stakeholders, as government, as whole, are our stakeholders. Then you've got the private sector, because we transact to them. They are our stakeholders. Then you've got our oversight bodies like yourselves, Parliament. You are our stakeholder there. Then you've got civil society organizations. They are also our stakeholders. So we've got a variety of stakeholders. And the interaction with each one of them is completely kind of different there. But I'll give you some flavor on what we are doing actually around there. As I've indicated, Mr. Fick, the office is fairly fully established there, and the numbers and the details that I gave you there. But because this is quite a bit of a specialized field, we complement it with expertise to come in. For example, we have done an assessment of our top 100 spending items. Now, if you take travel, and you take the travel industry, and we'll use it as an example later, it's quite a complicated industry. People think it's fairly easy. You need somebody who's sharp in that particular area, who can help you to untangle what's happening in the industry. So I don't want somebody as a director travel, but somebody who will just come in and do that work basically for us, and we'll share our experience actually around that. I'll just ask Rahadi to talk quickly around the stakeholder management and the work that she is doing there.
With regards to stakeholder alliance management, it used to be coupled with capacity building. Thereafter, it was split into two. Capacity building is now housed under the Office of the Accountant General to their full financial management as well as the supply chain. In the past, 2015 until now, we didn't... since the launch of the CSD in September, we launched it in the Eastern Cape with the former minister there. Thereafter, we started the roadshows to all nine provinces, ensuring that all the practitioners as well as the system users were trained, as well as the suppliers were informed about the CSD and all the reforms that are coming through. Thereafter, in December, we put an effort again to make sure that the suppliers get on board on the CSD as well as e-tender. We had a three-month campaign covering all nine radio stations as well as two commissions. And then we had billboard and newspaper print at best just to get the suppliers to register on time. And later on in this year, we had four engagements with the practitioners, because we realized that in the market everybody is offering a course on supply chain and they tend to create a lot of confusion for the practitioners as well. So we arranged four sessions to engage the practitioners at national level as well as their entities. And we engaged the civil society organizations last year just to help them to understand the SCM environment. We are hoping to get them on board to help us do oversight in some of the tenders that we're doing out in government. We further engage the business as well, and they are going to help us. One of the organized businesses is going to help us establish the call center just to deal with the 30-day payments for business. That's my story.
Thanks, Sakati. We're in the process of finalizing a survey. We have surveyed over 45,000 suppliers, right, where we've interacted with in the form of a survey. We're busy collecting the results of that particular survey. Once we got the report on that, we'll share it with the committee so that you understand what it is that we deal with, what is the frustration that comes through for suppliers. But I can give you already a few pointers that the suppliers are telling us. They're saying to us, look here, use technology in supply chain and improve internet access for us. And let's see how we can do that. It will make life easy for them. So 87%, for example, of them are saying that. Many of them have actually interacted with us and say, there are many innovative ways to approach supply chain. And we even prefer to share that information freely with you. So it's encouraging. 25% of them feel like when they submit their invoices, they don't get proper feedback from the state. And Rahari spoke about the 30-day payment problem that he's trying to resolve, for example, now, which is a big thing. We've done a rudimentary assessment of outstanding creditors and through the financial statements of departments. And we estimate that outstanding amounts that are payable to suppliers more than 30 days is about 100 billion rand. It's a huge amount of money that should be in the economy, which is not in the economy. So they share that frustration basically with us. Those are some of the highlights, actually that comes to that particular survey there. Then the next big innovation that has come through there has got to do with the central supplier database. I'll ask Tumelo here, you will actually, I'll run through it, but whilst we go through some of this, he'll give you a live demonstration of when a supplier, because what he will show you is what a supplier sees. If you get into your website now, www.csd.gov.za, you can register your company as I'm talking to you, for example, now. With that. So basically all that that the CFD basically does that. Let me step a bit back. The Auditor General had raised a number of issues in a number of orders, and many of the audit findings that the Auditor General has raised relates to administrative problems within supply chain. Either tax clearance certificates is nothing. There are employees who are doing business with the state. We don't have proper tracking of delinquent suppliers, and so we go. So what this does, it starts to help us to do that, right? So the supplier registers once, right? The supplier gets an ID number, like I will have an ID number from Home Affairs. That ID number is the ID number of the supplier while that particular company exists, right? So they get that, and they do a once of registration. The second thing is we standardize all the electronic stuff. They don't have to go to SARB anymore to get that clearance certificate. The system picks it up automatically from us. We can, on a real-time basis, see whether you are tax compliant or not. We go to SIPC, SIPRO, SIPC. We get all your director information and your business registration automatically, basically, from there. We've got access to your bank account details. So that we're thinking a year ahead or 2 years ahead, when you start to automate payments, that you're the supplier, we can already have your bank information already actually locked in. We interface with Home Affairs so that we get your identity numbers there, right? And as I've indicated, your tender defaulters and state employees, we're dealing with that. Currently, there are 68,000 suppliers that are actually registered on the system. It is now compulsory from the 1st of April. When you want to respond to a tender within the state, you need to have been registered actually on the central supply database. I'll ask Melo just to give you a sense, the committee a sense of how the central supply database basically works.
Good morning. So, like Mr. Brown has already indicated, we have the central supply database. So the central supply database is a portal that allows and enables suppliers to be able to reach for themselves, so that they can be able to do business with the state. Currently, what happens is if you're a supplier and you want to do business with the state, what you do is you have to go to each and every organ of state and register there on their database. You submit exactly the same forms in each and every department that you want to do business with, municipalities and entities included. So if you're a small company or a small business, why not focus your energies in marketing and growing your business rather than focusing on going to all these departments and registering on their supply databases, because that takes time, effort, and energy from the individuals that want to do business with state. So then the concept of the central supply database came or it was born. So what we want to do is we want to make it simple for suppliers to do business with the state. We want them to register themselves once, one place, and then from there on they can do business with any organ of state. They don't need to go all over and submit the same documents all over in different departments. So that is very, very helpful to our suppliers. Any supplier can be able to access the central supply database from anywhere. They just need any phone that has internet access. They can access and register themselves as a supplier to government by going to www.cc.gov.za. So not just on your page, there's also a flyer that indicates or provides more information about the central supply database in terms of the link and how does the process go about in order for one to be able to register themselves. So I'll be taking you through that particular site as to how does one register themselves. So I'm currently now, what you see on screen is I'm on the test site so that I can be able to just show you how the whole process works. So the suppliers go to the central supply database website and they create a profile for themselves, and then from there on they log in and they got an option to add supplier details. So when they go to that supplier details, they will be given an option to be able to add their company there. So there I've got a number of companies that I've been testing with that have already been added. So I'm just going to show you a couple of features that are on the site itself. You see, for each and every supplier, when they want to register themselves, what we do is we ask them about the company registration information. Mr. Brown indicated that we check the information with the company and Intellectual Property Commission, the CFTC. So we don't want suppliers to tell us who are their directors, what is their legal status of their businesses. They just tell us, my company is a closed corporation, this is my company registration number. And as soon as one has provided their company registration number, we go to CFTC, get their legal name of the particular business. You also get the business status, because a business can be registered with FTC, but it can be deregistered, or it can be currently being liquidated, or it can be in the final deregistration phase. So this status is quite important for procurement as well, because what happens currently, you find that the supplier will come and bring in a certificate that was generated a year over, while actually the business has been deregistered at CFTC. But if you're a practitioner, you don't have access to the CFTC to verify that information, then you find yourself doing business with a business that has actually been deregistered. So with the central supply database, we give practitioners access to live real information so that they can be able to do business with legitimate companies and businesses that they know that their information is acceptable and lawful and can be able to do business with them. And immediately after getting the business status, what other thing that's important is we can also get the registration date about the particular business, when was it registered. So that's also, if the suppliers don't tell us that information, we provide it, get it for ourselves, and they can provide it to our practitioners. And immediately after we have accepted or received that information, we also get the director's information. You see the site, the way that it's organized, has the contact information about the particular business, their address, their bank, their tax information. I just want to show you the directors. If you go to directors, this information here, what happens is you get this information directly from the company's register. So that particular individual is listed there is a director of the particular company. We know because we verify the information. And immediately when we get this information, we check also if this particular director is employed by the state, as well as checking whether are they currently restricted. The National Treasury currently maintains a list of restricted suppliers and a database of tender users. So if it happens that this particular director appears or has been restricted before, then this particular director will automatically pick up and identify this particular person is not supposed to be doing business with the state because they are restricted. If a state employee will check if they declare their interest, do they have permission to be able to do business with the state. So this particular function gives us an opportunity and the practitioners as well ability to be able to verify and make sure that they are doing business with legitimate individuals and individuals that are supposed to be there. What happens currently, you find that if I'm restricted or a particular company is restricted under company ABC CTY LTD, that company is restricted and that individual will go and open a new company acting under a different name, and if practitioners are not doing a thorough exercise of checking, that particular person ends up falling into the cracks and then they do business somewhere else. But in the central supply database, once you are restricted, you can go and open a new company under a different name who will definitely identify you and you will not be able to do business with the state going forward. So we believe this is going to help us a great deal in ensuring that we do business again with legitimate individuals. And then one of the other key things that I'd like to indicate to the honorable members is the tax information. So also with the tax information, what we do is each and every supplier, if a supplier wants to do business with the state, depending on the threshold that they want to do business with us, we're asking them to register tax certificate or tax information. They need to be paying their taxes. So here also on the central supplier database, what we do is we also verify that a particular individual has a valid tax certificate. So on the screen, what will happen is one will be able to capture their income tax number. With that income tax number, we go to SARS real time immediately. We ask SARS, SARS, what is the tax compliant rate of this particular supplier? And then get an answer back and they'll tell us this particular supplier is compliant or they're not compliant. And that information also is real time. What happens today is if one has a tax clearance certificate, you get a short copy. Because of all the kind of copies that we have today, you cannot really identify through a copy for that this is actually legitimate or it's not. But so because it's easy to fake that particular paper. And if you don't verify it, you just continue doing business. But in the central supply database, the real information, real-time, up-to-date information that is verified with the source, and our practitioners will be able to use it efficiently to be able to continue procurement. Okay, and then the rest of the items would be like your commodities, your BEE, which are quite also important through procurement process, of which all that information is made available centrally.
Thanks. I think you've got an app there that shows what we even know who are the suppliers, where they're from which country. We can tell you there are suppliers from the UK, there are suppliers from Kenya. This is the report that we can actually kind of generate. Actually, out of this. So then we can even track in what business are they in, and in what will they be interested in when they're going to tender, basically with us. So quite an innovative way of us to do business. Maybe just you can put it on if you want to show it quickly. How much did it cost us to put the system together? Maybe just a question from my side. How much do the members think we've paid for this? At least let me know the one who will be answering questions. Let me just ask this. Honorable Mr. Speak, to you, Mr. Chair.
Let's split about 100 million.
Yes?
Yeah, I'm going to about, I think, 150 million for this entire system process.
8 million. 8 million, right? That is what it has cost us. There's a reason why I'm giving you that. When Solly is going to talk about some other automation tender and how much you pay for in another department, you will be shocked. Technology has moved so fast that it has actually become fairly cheaper. But just continue, Kimelo.
I also just wanted to show you that we can also do a number of reports out of the central supply database. So meaning that if you are coming from Mpumalanga and then you want to know who are the suppliers that are on the central supply database that are located in Mpumalanga that are providing a particular commodity, then you can be able to draw the report and then get the information. The information goes into a ward level. So let's say, I'll give an example. We are here in Cape Town, just do a search, just on the test environment, whereby if you're looking for all the these providers that are providing normal commodity or is a catering services. So you'll be able to come to the central supply database as a practitioner, and then you'll be able to say, I'm looking for catering services, and then you can indicate the delivery location, where do you want the particular service? You'll say Cape Town. So you get the different suburbs that are in Cape Town, and then you say Cape Town CBD. And then when you do the search, what happens is you go to that particular suburb or even the entire province, and then it will get you all the service providers that are in that particular, that provides that particular service. And then it will list them for you, and then can tell you if whether that takes compliance status. It will also tell you if whether those particular suppliers. Remember, the African suppliers can be based in, say, in in Eastern Cape providing catering services, but then you can also have this particular option that says has a local address. If it says that particular supplier has a local address, it means that particular person is based in Cape Town and they provide that particular commodity. So you'll be able to identify and find your suppliers accordingly. Also, we will be enhancing so that you can be able to drill down to a ward level to be able to pick up and identify all the suppliers that provide that particular commodity also on a particular ward. So you'll know exactly who are your current suppliers in your own area or constituency that are already registered on the CSD and that provide the same specific services.
Let's move to the next one, which is the e-tender portal. Just talk through it as well. Thanks.
Then we also have the e-tender portal. The e-tender portal is a portal, it's a website whereby we want all the tenders that are currently available or published out there by different government institutions to be published on. So all government institutions are required to publish their tenders centrally online on the e-tender portal. And what is the benefit of the e-tender portal? Currently, suppliers are required to go to either the particular tender, the suppliers are required to go to a particular department, probably pay a certain amount of money to be able to access the document, and then they read the document at home and they try, but actually I paid 2,000, but this tender doesn't actually talk to me. It's something that I don't really play in or not interested in doing. So the internal portal was actually brought up to be able to deal with such issues, saying all tender documentation that is out there, all tenders should be published centrally on the e-tender portal, and the documents should be available for free. Meaning that going forward, all suppliers will be able to access tender documents for free online. They just download the information, read, and see if they're actually interested in participating on that particular tender or not. So it makes it much easier for suppliers because any supplier anywhere, while sitting at home watching TV, they can jump on their phone and see today which tenders have been published in my area, in my province, or in a particular segment of the industry. So it makes it quite easy and makes everyone to be able to access all the tender opportunities. Is just a matter of you being able to access the information. If you have access to information, then you'll be able to pay and make a meaningful contribution to the economy and you can be able to grow your business efficiently. And all the tenders that you are currently advertising, if you look at it, e-tender portal currently, we have over 2,700 tenders that have been published on the particular site. It's a lot of opportunities. It's worth billions of money. Maybe this is going to indicate plus or minus how much those tenders are worth, but it's a huge amount of money, of which is accessible to our people to be able to participate and be able to address or be able to grab those opportunities. And again, what helps is with the e-tender portal, it increases transparency. We're also publishing the demand plans. Demand plans are what the departments are planning over a year. Each and every department is required to do a demand plan that will indicate every department plan to go on tender for this particular item. So also on oversight, one can be able to check the demand plan and share against what has been actually advertised on the e-tender portal to see if actually the departments comply in advertising as so according to their plan. So that is very, very helpful in terms of helping us to be able to see if we're compliance happens or not.
And the e-tender portal, firstly, what needs to happen is the tender gets advertised there, the documents of the tender is free of charge, actually there. When the tender gets adjudicated, a list of all the people who put in bids must be published on the portal so it is visible for all suppliers, basically, with their prices, right? The winning bidder, information of the winning bidder must also be published on the e-tender portal itself and the price at which and the scores in terms of that. That basically helps us to deal with disputes. So because the system actually becomes fairly kind of transparent. Our single largest problem that we're faced with now as a government is actually the challenges that we are faced with on many of the awards that are made. Some are legitimate challenges, others are really just frivolous challenges. And that has got a big impact, actually, on service delivery, because it delays the rollout, actually, of the projects. So this is quite, I don't know whether members want us, we can show you quickly how the portal works, yeah. But even with this, we can even tell you which companies within South Africa and from where were responding for certain tenders. We can even tell you if overseas companies are participating and where they are searching. We can give you that information as well on a real-time basis. So it provides us with quite a bit of intelligence for how we approach supply chain moving forward. Maybe just for 2 or 3 minutes, just quickly.
Okay, so this is the e-tenders portal. The e-tenders portal for one tool to access, they go to e-tenders.gov.za, www.etenders.gov.za, and then the site has this option that says tender opportunities. Then you've got advertised tenders, you've got awarded ones, and the closed ones. So firstly, you start by advertising, and once you've adjudicated, like Mr. Brown has indicated, your award, and then all the tenders that have been closed, they are categorized in or grouped under this particular tag. So if I go under advertised tenders, you'll be able to see that these are all the tenders, and you are able to search and filter accordingly depending by a category or of a service, or you can check by province to say all the tenders that were published in a, say, Eastern Cape, and you can also even group them by a cluster. And then also you can even say by a department if you want to check if any, let's say, in a particular entity, if whether there's any tenders published, you can select that, and then once they search, it goes and filters the list, and then you'll be able to see only the tenders that have been published by the particular institution. So I didn't do the shortage, but it lists all the tenders there for you. And then from there, you also have the awarded tenders. So on awarded tenders, then if you go there, it lists all the tenders of which have been awarded, and then it will also indicate to you who are the winning bidders. And then on this one also, it does help us also on oversight, because I indicated that we have over 2,000 tenders that have been advertised, but if you check on the awards, it's only a few, maybe Mr. Brown can talk to that, it's only a few awards that have been made, and we're not sure as to what happens with that particular process at all. Mr. Brown will add more on the particular element. But the information that you get is, you'll get a particular, this, the awarded tender, and from there on you'll be able to see that the particular company is the one that won, and then who participated in the tender, all the people or companies that participated in the particular tender will also be indicated there. And yeah, and then also, so you'll be able to get their information and who actually got contract information, the value of which that particular tender was awarded for, that information is available for you. And then the same concept applies for closed tenders. You'll be able to operate the same way. You'll get a list of the ones that have been closed. The ones that have been cancelled, you also just get a list. So it makes it quite efficient and easy for everyone to just go and see actually where are we and what is up there, what are the trends, and where are the opportunities sitting at. Thank you.
Thanks. Now, from the 1st of April, every department must advertise on the e-tender portal. They're no longer advertising in newspapers. That's at least for national, provincial government and their entities. From the 1st of July, it will be for municipalities. Just that change in the rules is saving government close to R1 billion a year. We estimate it will save government R1 billion. If you look at newspapers, go and check the Sunday Times, City Press, and all of that, and the newspapers are lighter now. All of the tenders are no longer actually. It saves us close to R1 billion. We met with the publishing houses, Rahad and myself, that because they were saying, look, this thing is going to have an adverse impact on them as a business, basically there. And we said, look, we understand that, and you guys need to actually just accept that innovation is coming and you need to adjust your business model actually accordingly. What we're also thinking about is to use a similar portal for jobs, job ads. We're spending about R1.5 billion a year on job ads as a state. And if we were to do this, we'd save R1.5 billion as a state. But what is going to be important on the e-tender portal, we're thinking of developing an app, an application, where if a company is registered on the CSD and a tender gets advertised on the e-tender portal, we want to send a notification to the company so that the company can say, oh, there's a tender that's actually in line with my business thing, yeah, and then they can basically just respond to it. Because we must remember, if things are no longer in the newspapers, we must make it easy for business to be able to access information. So we're thinking on along all of those particular lines. So quite. And I must say, when we talk to business, they're very excited about it. And I say to them, now that you're excited, you must reduce your prices because we're reducing your costs. So we hope even to see in the future, when we buy things, we're going to start to see buying things at reduced cost because we're saving them money by doing a lot of things. The next one is the G-commerce. on the G-commerce side. Now, we've got what is known as transversal contracts. These are centrally negotiated contracts, which are managed by Kenneth Pillay there, right? Now, we've got vehicles. What is the value of the vehicle contract? It's about 8 billion. We can show you each and every model of a vehicle that exists. If you go open the motor that you get on a Thursday or so, that list, we've got a list and we've negotiated each and every model with the suppliers. If some suppliers that give us 5 to 6% discount, some suppliers give us up to 28% even discount on the vehicles, basically, themselves. So it's there. Now, you go and then we do the same for pharmaceuticals, we will do the same for medical equipment, and we go. But what we do with the G-commerce now, we want a department person who's going to do buying. If they want an X-ray machine or a wheelchair, they must just have wheelchair. And like in Amazon.com, all the wheelchairs that we've negotiated must be visible. They must place the order there, and then delivery must basically happen. So that it's no longer a paper-based fill-in of forms, and basically so you go. That's all that is doing. Then e-procurement. You're shocked, Honorable Members. The largest single source of corruption is in the procurement that we don't see. Quotations. Right? That's the single largest source of corruption. I must just be careful of the kind of examples that I use. I may just get fired soon. But here you've got a situation where things get ordered that you don't need, frankly. Things get ordered inflated prices. Things get ordered from basically the same company, just the three quotations are from different entities. And so you go, right? But we don't get also the best price. Actually, out of if members can remember, our minister indicated that we might have a price referencing system. We've actually done the price referencing system, but we found that actually it's a laborious process to do it. Let's give you an example. I mean, we've seen it. If you in central Pretoria, if you want to buy a T-bone steak, it will be more expensive than a T-bone steak in Lynnwood. The prices will be so different that it makes it quite a bit difficult to maintain the price referencing system itself. Now what we're talking about here, we're going to have a standard platform across government that looks the same. So you will be able to type in and say you want water, 500 milliliters and that. You type it in, all the suppliers that can supply you with it will be there, and they will bid electronically, basically for it. And then we'll drive prices actually down. It will also leave you with some kind of a trail. You know, who are the people that did the transacting, what price they pay, why did they pay this price, and basically so you go. So we want to actually automate quite a bit of things. Kenneth is just that he didn't put in the slide. He is responsible for transversal contracting. This is another part of the puzzle. Now, he has shown me, just for one tender, you will have documents that start from there, Kenneth, right up to there, for one tender. Just the administrative burden, just to process the tender, takes you 40 days. Just one tender. Now we want to immediately move into e-bidding, where people can submit all of their bids electronically, basically to us. And then we can manage the process actually electronically. That is what we're talking about there. We're quite at an advanced stage on rolling out basically this. And if this moves the way I think it would move, it's going to save the state quite a sizable chunk of money there. Sonny, will you talk to your governance, monitoring and compliance, please?
Thanks, Kenneth. Let me start with procurement plans, which also talk to the e-tender portal. From last year, on a quarterly basis, we are publishing procurement plans of provincial and national departments. Why are we doing that? Suppliers, they're able to know in advance that these institutions are going to advertise these tenders, and then they can plan in advance, because the plans will indicate this type of tender will be advertised by the Department of Education, will be advertised by the Department of Health, either in August or in September or in November. Therefore, you are able to plan in advance whether you will need to participate in that tender or you don't want to participate. And also, you're avoiding the abuse by the officials, because what some officials will do is to inform other suppliers in advance to prepare the documents to say that this tender can, and others will not. There was a time that Kenneth stopped the tender, which was a more than 100 million tender, and the tender was advertised for only 2 days. And you can only respond to that tender if you had earlier information. Otherwise, you can't complete documents for a 100 million tender within 2 days. But those are the challenges that we are trying to get rid of them through publishing the procurement plans. In terms of the review, what we do, maybe before I come to the review, on a day-to-day basis, we receive a lot of complaints. And some of the complaints are going to be sorted out by the systems that have already been talked about. The major ones are, for example, when people receive this base document, they look at the specifications, they note that the specifications are biased. Then immediately they phone Kenneth, our office, and says, yeah, we see this tender, this, the way this tender is designed, it's like it's going to create such a certain supply because of this and this and this. And immediately we review the bid documents and we see that indeed the tender is biased. Then we inform such an institution and they're able to change or to stop the tender so that the tender that should appear should be a tender with a specification that is not biased. Some of the complaints, it will be those for advertising for a shorter period, which when they are going to advertise now through the e-tender portal, we'll be able to monitor that on a day-to-day basis, and then we're able to stop them rather than only waiting for the suppliers to come to us. The review that we do what we call the pre-award bid review and the post-award bid review. The pre is when we receive information that the tender is not being properly evaluated and adjudicated. Then we are able to come in at that stage and we advise the institution to say, due to the things that we have noted, it will not be beneficial to the institution either to award this tender or to continue with this tender. And then the decision will be taken whether to cancel the tender or to correct whatever is there. The post-award is when the tenders have already been awarded and we receive complaints that that tender was not awarded properly. We also do the review. We check whether the process that was followed complied with SCM norms and standards. If not, then we are able to recommend that either the tender should be cancelled or should be re-advertised. If you look at the slide that is there, you'll see currently we are busy with the above 10 million contracts in most of our major public entities. Like in Eskom, we are reviewing contracts relating to coal and diesel. In Transnet, we are also reviewing contracts relating to consulting work. In PRASA, emanating from the report from the public protector where National Treasury was directed that we need to review or investigate this contract above 10 million. We have already appointed, I think, 13 companies, audit and legal firms. They are going to commence with this investigation very soon. SABC, we are also there trying to review those contracts that are above 10 million. And in other institutions, like I've indicated, we're doing that on a day-to-day basis. If we receive any complaint, we are able to review. The contract that Kenneth talked about is a tender that was advertised by the Department of Correctional Services, which the matter is also still being considered by SCOPA. But the tender was advertised and we participated in that tender. And at the end, the preferred bidder quoted 278 million. And when we were doing our assessment, we could see that this tender should have been awarded for maybe around 50 million. And we are still engaging the department so that that tender should be cancelled.
Thanks. Thanks, thank you, Mr. Brown. And thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. It is quite an exciting unit that we run as well, called Transversal Contracting. Currently, we seem to be managing about 26 billion rand of contracts for national and provincial government. This excludes the spend where we voluntary participation by the municipalities and some of the state-owned entities. We currently have about 40 contracts, and six of the review actually has an example of some of the contracts. We've also introduced four new commodity streams: property and leasing, professional services, education, ICT. Mr. Brown spoke about us starting to become more commodity focused. I mean, if you look at the property and leasing sector, the spend there is approximately 6 billion rand national and provincial government. But you can't have an administrative supply chain dealing with property and leasing. You need an expert that actually understands what the cost drivers are. Why does private sector pay 80 rand a square meter and why does government pay 104 rand a square meter? So in some of our buildings, that research is going on and we expect huge savings on property and leasing. On the professional services, this is a consulting and advisory services category. We conservatively estimate 10 billion rand in national and provincial government. There's education, which is running in at about 10 billion plan. If you look at textbooks, stationery, workbooks, school furniture, and we're targeting to actually start reducing costs. ICT, very conservatively, I would put it at 20 billion then or so, national provincial government. And there's various things we can actually do to improve our cost and quality of goods and services. The LTSM project, which we've recently launched two parts of it. One was the textbook and the other one was the stationery packs. But just to give you an example, we managed to reduce stationery packs to 110 rand per annum. If we get the entire nine provinces to participate, we save a billion rands.
Let me give you just quickly how that works. We go into grade R. We list all the requirements of the child in the grade R. They need chalk, they need clay, they need this, they need that. So they have 30 items. We go to grade 12, we do the same. They need 10 books, they need this, they need that, they need that. All of that, on average, is 110 rand a child. If you got kids who are in private schools or in expert schools and all of that, they possibly pay 600-700 rand or 1,000 rand for the same pack that we actually pay 110 rand. That is what I'm talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. We've successfully rolled out a school furniture tender for the Eastern Cape, and we're actually looking at further rollout to actually all the provinces to participate in a sort of central mechanism for school furniture, which is a high ticket spend item as well. There's also a nonsense standard that's been published on school construction. Previously, it was cost used to run at 60 to 70 million rand per school, and now there's norms and standards in place where schools will not cost us more than 35 million rand. Next slide, yes. Okay, so the reform is currently underway from the 1st of April. We're looking at compulsory participation. Previously, the regulation spoke to you can opt to participate in central contracts. From the 1st of April, we say, okay, you know, you need to participate compulsory in certain contracts. I'll give you, for example, medical equipment. In excess of 90% of medical equipment comes from outside the country. We were buying from the same suppliers virtually from outside the country, but we're paying huge differential prices across the provinces, across hospitals, across clinics. So that's something we're looking at, probably putting in a central putting in a phase will make it in 7 days, right? So we collectively by increased government's buying power. Over the next year, we're also looking at 15 more contracts. I spoke about some of the categories. We're going to focus education, health, the property and leasing sector, ICT, support services sectors that we're going to... We also want to, beyond this, so we're going to work with provincial treasuries to actually look at provincial contracts that we can do in each of the provinces. We want to look at increased participation of municipalities and some of our state-owned entities, essentially. I mean, in terms of buying bulk, if you take all the procuring entities in government, probably thousands and thousands if you include the entire government footprint. We don't want to forget our economic objectives as well. So local black small businesses need to participate in actively participate in central contracts. Mr. Bounce spoke about the online bidding process. Currently the system is old and outdated. We need to really transform how we do business and how contracts come in online. So we're looking at online tendering platforms to take away the administration burden that's currently sitting inside the OCPO. We'll have online catalogs that Mr. Brown spoke about and that will make available, all our products available. So as soon as we put a transversal contract, it will become online instantaneously. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think what is important, there are two things that I need to maybe clarify because it creates quite a bit of confusion in the system. Firstly, we will not run the whole tender system from Pretoria. There's going to be a big chunk of procurement that remains with the entities that they would run themselves. What we do, we some of the systems we centralize and must use our systems so that we've got the intelligence what's happening there. That's the first thing. The second thing, if we're going to centralize the tender, it is not Kenneth waking up one day and say, oh, this is a nice item, we must centralize. If it's a provincial transversal contract, for example, let's say school furniture, just as an example, because it's going to impact on 9 provincial education departments, there's a consultation process that takes place. We talk to each one in meetings. They form part of the committees. They will tell us what's happening in their provinces. So it is not a unilateral. It's not a unilateral process. And I think that is very, very, very important. So if you see a central tender that's there, it's a tender that has been inclusively negotiated by all of the people who will be affected by that particular tender. We can do the same for national departments, for example. If you're going to have a vehicle contract, we look at who are the biggest users of vehicles. It will be defense, it will be police, it will be... So we look at all of them. So then we call them and they form part of that kind of process. So it is not a unilateral kind of process. It's compulsory for the 1st of April. But we also say to the users, if you find a commodity that's there that's far cheaper than what's on the same contract, let us know so that we find a way of getting that contract on as well, you see. So we may miss certain parts of the system, and we're open to people bringing those parts actually in the... Adel, could they?
Okay, with strategic procurement, what we say is that current processes in government is very rule-driven. And I think that is very much the reason why government strategic sourcing is slightly different from private sector strategic sourcing, is that the implementation thereof because of our legislative environment. But what we said is that shouldn't... preclude government from doing strategic sourcing, because we need to look at more intelligent ways of procuring commodities, and we are advocating a differentiated procurement approach. And what I mean with differentiated procurement approach is that you don't buy stationery the same way as that you would buy capital equipment. You go to C&A and you decide what you want. If you buy a house, you do a little bit of research. So strategic sourcing is about that effort that you put in prior to going to the market, analyzing your market, analyzing your value chains, supply chains, to really determine how the commodity fits together. And I'll use the travel and accommodation project as an example of
of everything that I'm going to share with you now. So with this differentiated approach of procurement, we look at what the specific commodity's impact is on your business. What impact does it have on the department if you cannot supply, if you do not have the commodity? And you look at the supply market complexity. So just based on those two elements, you can determine whether whether a commodity is routine good, like stationery. And there you would apply a different sourcing approach than what you would apply to a commodity that has high complexity, high business impact, and that's a strategic commodity. And there you would employ a different sourcing approach, like negotiation. Then you have leveraged goods, and leveraged goods is where we need to maintain competition, and that's where we need to keep our tender processes going to leverage our economies of scale and our buying power. And then the last one is bottleneck goods. And the bottleneck is where you need to maintain or manage your risk of supply. But all of that information in detail is in Chapter 5 of the review document. And there's also a nice piece in that review that talks about the difference between traditional approach to procurement and the strategic approach to procurement. But in our unit, we identified what we do is you do a portfolio analysis of government spend. And we did one for 2012 to 2014, and we are busy analyzing, or we have analyzed it, and we found that the top five commodity categories, only five of the categories make up more than 50% of government goods and services spend. So it already gives you an indication where you need to start looking for opportunities for savings. So, and also know which departments would be involved in those categories. So you can immediately, with your sourcing strategies, involve those departments and look at those specific commodities to look at smarter way of procurement. In, the travel and accommodation project is one of those commodities that we now started looking at smarter ways of procurement. And this is an example where we employed negotiation, where we're employing tender processes. So it's a little bit of a mix of all the approaches. There's some items maybe can be routine as well, and some bottleneck ones. But in this process, we actually negotiated with the airlines. We've identified two full-service carriers, VA and SAA, and you can imagine that there's no sense in going out in a tender process of this. There's only two full-service carriers in the market. So we structured a negotiation team. We did all the research that we could, and we negotiated very structured negotiations with these two airlines. And the outcome of that was that we managed to get, for the full economy, wide-class tickets, about 30, between 25 and 33% upfront discount to published rates. And obviously the other classes, it's, depending on which class, there's different discounts applicable. But the full wide class, the one that we use most, is 30%. Then we also negotiated with four major hotel groups to help us establish our maximum allowable rates per star grading. And that also resulted in some immediate savings. Instead of the old cost containers of 1,300, we are now replacing that with a maximum allowable rate per star grading. So it's not only about tender processes, it's also looking at efficiency gains. So in our, I think you can sit next one. Yeah. Current reforms is that we are looking at issuing the National Treasury Travel Policy, or the travel policy applicable to government, and every government department will adapt it to its own requirements. We will also issue a National Treasury Instruction giving departments guidance on how to apply strategic sourcing. It's almost like a strategic sourcing for dummies that they can use with templates and guiding documents to assist them. We are also busy with a communications project, mobile communications and fixed line, and our estimated savings for those two would be about between 300 and 600 million over the next year. The travel and accommodation, we are only concentrating on domestic air and domestic accommodation, shuttle services, car rental companies, and travel management companies. But there's further work to be done in terms of conferencing, bus and coach hire, and some other travel related. So that's an ongoing project. The new project, the medical equipment one, we spoke about standardization of equipment specifications, and we have already completed the first phase of that and it's going to continue. We looked at the high value, high volume items that are used in most of our hospitals and clinics, and the value is about 2 billion. New projects that we are looking at is LTSM distribution, procurement and distribution models. We want to determine the different models that we are currently employing, are they the best or can we improve on that? We will continue with medical equipment because that's such a huge category. We only managed to do 44 or 48 items this year. We will be looking at medical waste management, hospital laundry and linen, hospital food services and cleaning services, as well as looking at a pharmaceutical dispensing model to see that our citizens that are not on medical aid, how do they get their medicines instead of going to hospitals and standing in queues for days on end, how we can assist our citizens in that. We're also looking at infrastructure and related professional services, doing a little bit of research there. And together with transversal contracting, you can see that there's a lot of synergy between transversal contracting and strategic procurement. We're actually collaboratively looking at other opportunities for sourcing initiatives that can result in transversal contracts and do some research around that.
Thank you, sir. Honourable members, just to give you a feel of what the staff's talking about, we're spending 9 billion a year on travel. About 4.5 to 5 billion of that is on SNT. Like, these guys will collect SNT because they're not at home. Oh, alright? We spend another 4.5 billion on actual travel. Right? And on the actual travel part, all of these negotiations, we should save roughly about 1.5 billion. Just on the actual travel part. But what the national travel policy wants to achieve is to put control mechanisms so that people don't travel willy-nilly. The delegations that travel should be reduced delegations. And then so you go. So that it will reduce the overall bill of travel from hopefully from 9 billion to far, actually less than that. That is when we talk about reassessing a commodity, is going deeper into those particular details. So it's exciting work. Then plans for compliance and monitoring. We are now trying to think of how do we put formats together so that you can have enough information for proper oversight. So that you understand predominant plans when you talk to a department, let's say correction service, you said you're going to get so many prisons, right? Did you do costing? How much does it cost? Because they need to do it upfront. It must be now. Alright? You said you're going to put out this tender on the day. You're going to finalize this tender year. The fence will be built by then. That is what the procurement plan will start to show. So we want to design systems so that when you get information, you can intelligently talk to a department specifically about certain things that are actually there. We're supposed to see this problem, right? Where I think the Auditor General said non-response tenders or tenders that get cancelled is about 40% actually of tenders that get cancelled. Think about the impact on service delivery. About 40%. You advertise a tender, better respond to it, adjudication process takes place, and it's just out of nowhere tenders just get cancelled. I mean, I've got some people that have reported certain instances to which we are investigating. So when people now see that, but this tender is not going to go to the person that we thought it will go to, they cancel it. And it's a painful thing because you as a company, you've put in money to put that tender together. And then all of a sudden this thing is cancelled. So we want to actually even do a database of cancelled tenders per department and actually make it known. so that people like yourself, the public, can start to ask questions, but why is the department continuous entering tenders there all the time? You see? So when we talk about oversight compliance, we're thinking around that. And I think what will help us, honorable members, where you sit, you can also tell us what kind of information you would want, so that we can help you to deal with that. But we're thinking quite a bit of that. Many departments are doing forensic investigations. They say, oh, there was a problem here, they put forensic investigation. But the results of those forensic investigations never get known. You don't know who was investigated for what and what has happened. And I think it's our time that we become transparent around those as well. So what we're looking at is for a department accounting officer, where there are investigations underway, those investigations must be known. We even tell them they must conclude them at a particular time. They must publish some of the information related to that, so that we really build a culture of compliance actually into the system. The minister announced that by year B we must save 25 billion rand a year. And I said to the team, no. Let's try and push it so that we already start to save 25 billion from this year. So at least we can save 75 billion rather over 3 years. And some of the things that we are doing now, we start to see positive savings that will actually come through. We have assessed the top 100 suppliers, and I think just go to the next slide. Right. We're spending money with Telkom. We wasn't negotiating with Telkom. I think it's 2 billion that is the money to spend with Telkom. And we start to interact with Telkom and say, hey, chief, can't you give us better rates of the thing? They are kicking and screaming. But what they are missing, like the post office, innovation will eventually take the better part of their business. Because what happens even now with voice over internet protocol, we can call each other for free. And later on, if you call government departments, we will have interconnectivity where we actually can call each other for free. So if they're not smart, they may end up at the wrong end actually of the stick. Bezelry, just to give you an example, they've got a tender to build, I think, 12 schools for 600 million. It works out to 50 million rand a school. So my team met them last week, and we're going to ask them to send us a bill of quantities. We want to understand, how do they get 50 million? So we're going to meticulously go through the bill of quantities, right? And then we'll negotiate with them and say, chief, instead of 600 million, let's talk 500 million. Give back 100 million. Because many of the construction, some of them were very open when we spoke to them. They said government doesn't know what they buy. They don't know how to negotiate some of the contractor, and so you go. You see? So what we do now, we learn from them what are the things that we do wrong. We're documenting that, and when we talk to the infrastructure matters late, moving forward, we're going to implement a lot of the things that they've already told us of what's going to happen. The one way we're going to negotiate next week, and I said to these guys, they must really go and find the details around this one. They said, it must have been a billion or a billion and a half for building a 6-kilometer road. I said, my goodness, is the road going to be not tired, will be gold, I suppose. So what we do, we actually go into the details, and then we go and identify some parts, and then we go to the company and say, let's talk. Please, let's renegotiate many of these things. Many of them actually are looking at our approach fairly kind of positive. Microsoft, we pay horrendous license fees for Microsoft. So we said to CETA, let's renegotiate, for example, that as well. So some of our focal areas are going to be in construction, pharmaceuticals. We're looking at how we're going to streamline the banking system. You've got 4 major banks actually in South Africa that does business with the state. But the 1,000 state entities put out a tender every time when they want to interact with these guys. We may as well just go to them and say, let's standardize fees, and how do we carve the business so that you get at least a fair share of the business going forward. So we're thinking around it. ICT, and I say, but my DA doesn't do complicated work. Why must he have a state-of-the-art computer? In her case, she must actually have a normal 3,000-4,000 computer that will send emails and do the rest. Myself, I don't even do a lot of work. I'm actually ashamed to say it. Because these guys are doing the work. Even myself, I don't need a state-of-the-art computer. Because Estelle, when she does data mining, will need a completely different computer. So if you look at it this way, I'm a put a 4,000-amp computer, she messed with a 10,000-amp computer. So that is what we call, and CETA has been doing a lot of the work actually already, and there's going to be quite a bit of positive things coming up. So that's a list of some of the things that we are looking at. The point that I made to you around technology innovation, I've already indicated to you some of the savings that are possible that will actually come through the system goes. The next slide. This is where I've covered the issue around the PAs and basically, so you go. I mean, even with space utilization, in the private sector, office space per individual is about 18 square meters. In government, it's about 36 square meters. Not into square meters. So already if you have a space utilization project that's going, I think they used to call it work study back then. If you have a proper done, you'll find that you can actually reduce the leasing requirement of government at least significantly by just doing things different. Just get on to the next one. Reducing red tape. Many of the processes that we're implementing are actually starting to talk to how do we reduce red tape, basically. Then we get to policy. This is an important area. People keep on saying, hey, your rules, they're killing us. We need to find smart ways of really... Now, if you look at the automation that Tumelo eloquently spoke about, as part of rationalizing actually many of the circulars and all of that, because if you start to automate, the rules become less that you know. Something that's very important for us is going to be how we take empowerment forward. Section 217 of the Constitution, 2, talks about empowerment and how it needs to happen. It's not debatable that South Africa is an unequal society, and we need to find a way of how do we use procurement smartly to really, in a decisive way, do empowerment there. What will be coming through later in the year is a public procurement bill. It will fully establish the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to give particular administrative powers to do certain things. It will also identify the roles and responsibilities between the different role players in the department, your executing authority, your county officer, and basically so you go, who does what when, what are the reporting requirements, etc. What is it that the accounting officer needs to do? We'll clarify a lot of that. We will be clear around empowerment and how empowerment is going to happen moving forward. Reporting and transparency, what information needs to be out there in public on a monthly basis, what information should be available for yourself as the legislators to do proper oversight. Abuse of the system, here I must emphasize, what's going to come through on the abuse of the system, we're going to be ruthless in our proposals. Yeah. That's what it is. You've got business that abuse the system, because corruption is not one-sided, that's who. There's business. What we already penciling in this is we restrict the company, we restrict each and every director in that company, we even restrict that, in fact, together with that what we're proposing is if your company has done business as running contracts in other parts, we assume that those contracts were also wrongly obtained. We make them under administration, we may take them over, and then there we go. We're talking draconian stuff. We will restrict that individual from registering on SOC. So if you are corrupting the state, we will try and prevent you that you don't do business outside of the state as well. People can say, maybe that's unconstitutional. So no. Corruption cannot be unconstitutional. It's a fact. And then we need to think about how we're going to deal with that in a fairly kind of decisive way. So the abuse of the system, we're going to deal with that. But then, abuse of the system happens knowingly in some departments. A department will know, but this tender is going to be wrongly awarded or adjudicated. An accounting officer reluctantly approves that. But when you inform the accounting officers, they do nothing actually about it. So how do we put automatic measures in place? So if this is wrong, that tender needs to be cancelled. The cost needs to be recovered from whoever. The official needs to be suspended. These things must be automatic. It shouldn't be left to the discretion of somebody. that. Because if you do that, you will forever have through and fro as to what needs to happen. And I can give you a number of examples where we struggled for people to really deal with it. So the law itself is going to be draconian when it actually comes to dealing with the abuse of the system. I spoke briefly in my introductory remarks around dispute resolution. There are people who legitimately dispute the way the tender has been awarded, and we need to give them the opportunity to do that. But we need to put measures in place that allows for dispute resolution without hampering service delivery. Because many people, I mean, there are many projects that are standing still, because in some cases of frivolous disputes that are actually put in place. And then how, when we talk reporting, how do we report to yourself? What is required from us in our relationship with the legislature? What information and how do we use community service organizations smartly, also in terms of oversight, is going to be that. The next, we hope to have the bill actually finalized by the middle of May. We will have, but we have actually had consultations with many stakeholders externally around it. So what we're doing is actually a collaborative approach that we will, when the bill is ready, we'll put it through public consultation, and then we will bring it through to the legislature. Now, support coming that we would require from some of the department entities, etc. And I must say, honorable members, 95% or so of our departments are with us. Many of them are actually tired of corruption. They want to bring efficiency in the system. Many of the things that we talk to you about here come from ideas from many of the departments actually themselves. So we're trying to carry them with us so that whatever we come up with is really a collective kind of effort. But you've got the delinquents, so it will take time around many of that, those things. But as I've indicated, we'll deal with transgressions and so we go there. But the single largest problem for us is capacity. Many of the failures may not be corruption related. It is near the capacity of the system to manage this as a business. What would be interesting if you were to ask a department, just tell in terms of your structure. You are the accounting officer, you go to the CFO, where is supply chain in this hierarchy? You will be shocked in a department where it lies. You will be shocked where it is actually lies. Then you find that a low-level employee manages a portfolio of 10, 15 billion rand. Think about it this way. Here you're talking about a budget that you as a committee approve. They come with strategic plans that you approve. They come with APPs that you approve. But they don't come with how they're going to deliver. This is what we're talking about. How are you going to deliver? Now, in each department, there must be somebody who comes to you and says, in my department, I am the guy who's going to make sure that delivery takes place. These are my qualifications. This is my experience. And basically, so we go related to that. Right? Because that, if we don't get that right, we will never get things going. Now, I say this is a specialized field. Because if you're going to purchase cars as a department of, say, police, you need to know what kind of cars you're going to purchase. You know, you can't be policing with MP200 vans. Technology, what technology do you need in the car itself? The car must be of such a nature that the weaponry must be safely stored. You can't have your R7 or R5 in the boot. When the thieves come, you first drive and go and hide yourself somewhere before you can take out your R5. But also when you get into the car, you mustn't shoot yourself by accident. So, you know. You see, so it is quite a bit of a, I may dramatize it, but it is a specialized field. In the treasury, I was saying to them, and I want to ask my DG, does he know what are cost drivers in the treasury outside of personnel? What is it that we buy? Do we consume paper? Do we consume, what is it that we consume? Where do we buy from? Who manufactures these things? Are these things imported? You see, all of those things are, you need to run your department like a business. Like a business. If you want to reduce cost, you must be able to immediately know, I'm going to reduce cost in those particular kind of areas. Instead of having one printer for every two workers, if I organize the space in a particular way, I can have one bidder for every 8 workers. And so you go. You see, it is a business. So the way we need to build our own capacity is beyond a degree. It is just simple kind of common sense that we would want to happen there. And this is the final slide, basically. And I've touched on many of these. I think Honorable Chair, to allow for a firing squad to deal with us, I will stop there.
I can tell you now, Chief Procurement Officer and your team, that you have, having listened to what you're saying, you have the support of the committee.
Absolutely.
And I say this because I think that this committee on appropriations, which follows money that is related to predetermined targets, money that is related to outcomes, becomes your partners. Honourable members, there you have it. Let's engage with the presentation. Who wants to accept? Don't he? But shoot. Honourable Sheikh Imam. Honourable Belo Mashoba. All right. I, Honourable Natasha Lowe. Right. Let's take the honorable seek. The four names. We will look around again as just. Shoot your hand up if you think you're ready to talk. We will see you. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. And let me admit that despite the despondency earlier on with the late arrival of the documents, I think this presentation indeed was very valuable and informative, and I must thank you. And for that reason, I think I've got pages and pages and pages of questions. Normally that doesn't happen. I think it's because of the important information and valuable stuff that you did to us. And I think we all know that supply chain has been a concern to a lot of us in this country, especially appropriation. My one colleague who always talks about, my colleague is here, that follows the budget. She's here to follow the budget again today. And the money, to follow the money. And for that reason, I want to ask one question before I start with my others, is would you be able to provide us periodically, whether it's monthly or quarterly, a report on all the challenges in the different departments in terms of this new system that you're going to roll out? Would defaulters, would corrupt officials, would not following the processes and things like that? If you could do that, it will actually help us to follow that money correctly and stop what is going on. But indeed, it's a great pleasure to know that you're introducing this, because I think this is half the battle won if we can actually achieve it. Although I know that if you are a specialist in crime, you'll know how to get around it. You'll find your way around. I want to know whether you've got a CAM. With regards to the issue of pricing, are you going to really look at very seriously, because about pricing in one area to another area being different, you find that something will cost you 10 rand in Cape Town, 1 rand in Durban, whether you're going to be able to put something for nationally, even though local is going to be still procuring, so that you give them guidelines on prices on as to how it should be, so that they don't just go on and buy and go on the system of saying they still gave it to the cheapest one. But I want us to be mindful of something else. A lot of this corruption and problems that we have in supply chain is not created at the time of tendering or bid. It starts at the budgeting process. In fact, I can tell you sometimes when one guy decides, and you know what, I'm going to have this massive, I'm getting married to my third wife and I don't have money, he will create it up to surface, resurface that road even if it was not budgeted for. That's all they will do, and then they call it what you call irregular expenditure, then you go and regularize it, it's provision for it, 36B, I think it is, and it's done. Now, what happens, then the prices that you're quoting there, it's exorbitant, you make it, you still, like you said, around that three-quotation system doesn't work anymore, believe me. Because one man gives you all three quotations. That's all they do. Now, who is actually going to be awarding this tenders? This is what my concern is, who eventually is this going to be done by your department? Is it going to be automatic based on that? Because one of my other concerns is, and I raised this previously with Treasury, you know, there's also apparently some legislation or some with regards to if you are the lowest bidder, and if you're under 50% of the value, then we don't give you a job because we believe you can't do the job. Even though you're lower, your overhead may be much lower. I can tell you now, and I've said this previously, not to you, but there were four tenders given to different people because the guy who's the lowest, who's got the best reputation, the whole of KwaZulu-Natal to produce the goods, was not given the job because it was 15% less than the price that he should be receiving. But can I tell you what? Every one of the four people went back to him to do the job, and he made more money. So that is what my concern is. How are you going to, you know, you protect that, and because obviously your system should be, I don't know if you're going to have in your system, where you're going to identify maybe for good practices, people who've been performing. Now, to come back to my other challenge with regards to, I don't know if your system is going to provide for whether one person or a contractor is good for the, if you take a 50 million rand contract and this man deliver, does he have the capacity, does he have the financial muscle? And I'm going to come back in, and I want to give you an example so you'll know where I'm coming from. This good comes, you had the opportunity of going to Eastern Cape. And one contractor sitting in plush offices in Sandton was building two schools for 82 million and 78 million. But thank you, now the schools will be 35 million. So you see how much of money made. But both schools were standing with no material, to give no money to buy the material. All staff were standing. So how are you going to check whether a person's got a contract? Is good for you in terms of your rules and legislation or whatever, that is good for 50 million. But he's got a contract for 50 million, he's busy with that, then he gets another one simultaneously. Now he's not good anymore because it's only good for 50 million. Now are you able to check whether you're only basing it on the fact that his criteria was 50 million, now he's going to 100 million. So I want you to actually tell me with regards to that. The idea of that one central tender is very good. I can tell you the sad thing about tendering. I've seen it. 60 people will drive 300 kilometers to tender. They will buy the expensive documents. They will sit there for the site meetings. But it is already decided before that meeting who's getting the job. So 59 people went and sat there for nothing. They were just made fools. They spent their money. So at least this will give them an equal opportunity for all of them to tender. But I want to know that there are other criteria when you qualify in terms of being, I think, your site visits in terms of contracts. And you're apparently supposed to sign some written, I know I thought it's manipulated as well, because you guys did you sign it after that, the MMZ, what do you call them, on the site, they don't give you that document, yeah, they don't give it to you, then they give it later to sign to say you were there, all those things, like, you want to know, I know it might be too much, but these are the things that concern, because these are the things, the reality of what is happening on the ground in the civil corruption. Now, a great percentage of this money that is being embezzled, that's the term I should be called, stolen, taxpayers' money, is done in the smaller contracts. If you add them all up, they work out to be much more than these large contracts. And the quotation system, I mean, I asked one guy, how did you decide which three people you're going to choose on your database and ask them to tender? He cannot answer that. Because it means it's not fair to the other 60 people on your system. So, the other thing is this, how would you limit communication at all between any interested party, business, or whoever they are, with your officials and your booking that's going to make sure that good practice is maintained at all times and close all doors for corruption or information leaking out and whatever it is. You know, the budget information also gets given out to tourists to tell them that for that job we've estimated 20 million. So it gives you a guideline as to how you must deliver it. So that's another problem that we have. So you want me to give the others a chance and then come back, but there's a whole lot that I've got. But I want to express that because this is what I find in reality. And I want clarity so that if there is any gaps, maybe we can identify them and try to close them. Can I do that, sir? Give some. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much to OCPO for the well-presented information. Is really informative. It assists us in our oversight to really check where we are going and to look at when we are dealing with the department. I want to take here, you know, this issue of corruption and also tender defaulters. It's a challenge that's being faced by the government. You default this side, you go on the other side, and you become legitimate on the other side. But can I check, is there any plan for OCPO to try and have a tracking system for those defaulters, tender defaulters, so that we prevent the non-performance of them, corruption, and so on? That's the first question, Chair, I have. Also, you have indicated also on the presentation around the issue of the challenge facing the supply chain management practitioners around the issue of the skills, knowledge, experience, lack of accountability due to lack of capacity sometimes, as we have indicated, that sometimes is not corruption, it's because of the lack of capacity. But can I check, does the OCPO have the mandate or power to really expose those that are failing, you know, to do their job in your report when you come to us, so that it will be easier for us to deal with them when we do our oversight, maybe to indicate this department is having 1, 2, 3, you know, which is a challenge. I know that you did say that at this moment you are working together, but the other reports that we are getting the non-cooperation in the department. As a result, we fail. We're looking at the reports of the Parliamentary Budget Office. You know, the report is inconsistent because of the lack of information sometimes, which made us, as the public representative, difficult to really follow if there is no clear information that you'll follow to make those people account. Also, on the issue, you did talk to the challenge that people are not following the systems and the policies and so on. But my question is, have you checked whether all the SCM policies and regulations are the policies? Because other policies are being made to have loopholes, so that when corruption is being done, you blame the system. No, it's because we did not have this, and then we fix. Have we checked whether on the supply chain management policies, they are correct policies that will, if be followed, will allow people that are responsible for SCM to be accountable, because the policies really guide, they are not cumbersome, if I may say that. Have you checked? I understand that you said you only deal with the tender of 10 million, for argument's sake. And we, in our experience, you know, you sometimes, I think maybe, do you have the mandate to make a guideline for all, even including the SOEs, you know, to follow the guideline to say that if these are the SEM policies that need to be followed, you know, just guiding them so that they can't say that, no, it's a capacity, we can't do right SCM policies and so on. So I want to check whether will you have something that will guide all of them, and also what my colleague has raised to say that when they are doing this tender and this procurement, really they are being guided. They are not running away from what we've negotiated and start their own things, you know. Is there going to be a center that will be holding around the issue of the supply chain management in the government and the issue of procurement, so that you can make them account? You know, they don't have the window to go out, whether you have the power to do that. Also, you know, we are faced by a situation whereby the service providers come up with high prices for goods and services. And sometimes, you know, you have the contract that face certain suppliers, or sometimes collusion, you know, because it is big business are doing corruption. We come plastic and then they collusion. When millions of rand are being stolen, we are saying it's corruption. When billions of rand are being stolen from the public purse, we are saying collusion. And you will never hear a voice, people saying this collusion, because people may say when the stadium was built, billions of rand were stolen. But nobody has raised this thing, you know. I want to check whether you have any mechanism to try and prevent any behavior of non-performance and poor quality of products. Are you having a mechanism of trying to prevent that? You know, I know that you have indicated some, but you know, I'm worried about collusion because it was billions of rand, but no South African has heard talking about it. They keep quiet on those particular matters. As we are correct, as we have correctly indicated, corruption is two ways, private sector and public sector. Because the private sector actually the one that has got a plan for corruption. Because they negotiate that corruption with the people that they are working. They are negotiating the low prices, but it's not corruption, something that is good for the government. Yes. I want to check whether you have any mechanism to assist the government. And also, on those systems that are not in line with legislation and so on, I check that one, whether you have checked it. If you have checked it, what plans? Because we are saying you are coming together so that you assist each other to strengthen these systems and policies, so that people can account through that. Lastly, Chair, Section 2172 of the Constitution and Presidential Procurement Policy Framework Act provides for the use of public procurement as a means of development and transformation, which is your mandate, direct mandate. It's your direct mandate. How are you going to deliver on that, especially on the issue of transformation? Because those that were prohibited by law during apartheid era to be part of formal business or to be in the formal economy, how are you going to make sure that you transform the system and they become hard? It's not like I saw only, it's like by the way that they will be. But do you have a plan? Because it's one of your key, you know, mandates to say that development and transformation. Because if the policies, if the procurement, if the supply chain is not transformed, you are not going to transform even the sector. Do you have a plan to deal with that one? Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I just have also a whole list. We'll just list a few now, Chair, and then also come back with a second bite. You know, tenders and the tender system within government is the corruption hub of South Africa currently. And that's precisely why we are saying tender system should be abolished, because of that corruption hub. Now, having said that, do you have within your department a contract management system? Because within procurement you have to have a contract management system. We have heard in the past with the Prasa issue whereby prices were inflated due to the rent dropping and so forth. But it would have been common knowledge for the person that went and negotiated the deal that you go and make a deal outside the country. That is some of the factors that you have to take into account if the person was knowledgeable about to negotiate a contract. So do you have such an office in place within your department? Then also, do you have an office, you spoke earlier about the survey that you are currently doing. I don't know if I hear you correctly with regards with disputes and things like that. But do you have an office that is dealing precisely with that? Because you have spoken earlier about a gentleman that is attending a court case of over 20 million as well. So do you have an office that deals precisely with those disputes and resolving those disputes? Then also on the e-portal system, the e-tender portal system, who is the administrator and who's going to administrate it? Also the same as my colleague was asking, is who is going to give out the tenders? Do you just press and it's going to press automatically and things like that? Because that is what I would just like in an ideal world, that is what you would like it to do. So when people put in and load the information, then the system awards automatically the tender. Not for maybe perhaps a junior staff receptionist, you said to your receptionist, no, go and change that information there and there. You understand my point. Who have access to it, who can change settings, or it can be done on this e-tender portal system, and how would you track it? If say, for instance, some people can override the systems on the e-portal and things like that. And then on the property as well, I find it strange for government to hire properties and stuff like that, or build up to sort of have a lease. Why don't we just buy the properties? Because you have a situation whereby in Northern Cape, the previous MEC John Block is owing half of the properties, and he's doing business with the state, he's leasing it out to the state and stuff like that. So why don't we just buy the properties or build it, these properties, if we can save. There's so much money that goes out of the country through illicit flows and things like that. So if we can have perfect mechanisms and things like that, you have mentioned the billions that you can save and things like that on procurement. So all of those monies can be put together to buy this building, then to lease it to one individual and stuff. So I think we really need to do an investigation in that. And then also on the travel as well. I'm happy and I welcome your suggestion on the travel, because as we have seen in recent weeks, we have a lot of trips to Dubai that is undertaken by government, and we know our friends is now in Dubai. So we need to have such a system in place and to track this traveling and things like that for government officials not to take unnecessary trips and things like that to go in and negotiate other things that is not government related. And then can I please also have, I think we have asked it earlier, on a list of all of the departments and municipalities that are guilty of cancelling the tenders and things like that before it's being awarded. And then I have another one. And the reviewing contracts above 10 million, all contracts with Eskom, Prasa is also in there, and Transnet, and consulting contracts. That's precisely why I asked, do you have a office that deals with contracts? Because the gentleman was talking there about hiring 13 companies to deal with those. If you're saying to other departments, stop using consultants, where else in your department you are still using consultants, then what is the difference between that? And then the coal contracts, I would like
was lucky to see which coal contractors is there. Is Shaduka one of them that is going to be reviewed under those coal contracts? And then 40 transversable contracts, if I can also have a list of that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I'm not going to get as excited as my colleague Sheikh Mamlek to me about this document, because we have a lot of good documents, and with respect, I say this, and I would like to see the result first, and then I'll get excited. So I'm looking forward to 3 years' time, and the way things are going, I was going to say if I'm there, but the way things are going, I should be in 3 years' time. So it's looking good. So, and you know, also people that deal with corruption tend to get dealt with, and I'm hoping that the same thing doesn't happen with yourself, because of course it looks a very good instrument to use, but the implementation, as is mentioned in one of your latest slides, is that it is one of the challenges. So, but I think the support you need the support, and from this committee you should get the support. Honourable Chairperson, some of the issues that I want to talk to have been covered in a different way. So if I've covered them, if they have been covered, I apologize. But I want to refer to the slides. Slide number two. The one that deals with the database, the SIM supplier database. I know to register on the database and IT training has been done. I raised this issue before about whether all your potential suppliers have the capacity and the necessary infrastructure to register on the database. Because it would be a pity if you know, your smaller suppliers don't get the opportunity to also benefit from the state. That's the one issue. And then obviously adding to that, your local suppliers, would they be in any way disadvantaged because of this now having a central database? And I'm not so sure how the goods are going to be supplied, if they're going to be supplied locally or from that central supply or a central supplier. So that's for clarification I just need. Then on slide number three, there's just a few issues there on the chair. The bank account details. Now, I'm sure this does happen, but you know, with technology comes, it's easy to verify somebody's status and somebody's information manually, but now using technology, it becomes a little more challenging as well, because now that verification needs to take place. So how is the verification process with regards to your banking details checked? Because it's easy to have somebody that qualifies in terms of certain criteria, but you know, the bank accounts, is that all matched up to ensure that the person who is registering as a supplier is the same person whose bank details are also on the system. The editing, I noticed that there is editing of the on the website that can be done. Is there any control? I think Honourable Lowe also indicated something to that effect, is can somebody access the details of a supplier and edit the information without authority? Again, with regards to the value, this is regarding the value of or the cost of the schools. We hear now that the schools are costing 35. I'm going to come back to that, just knows what those schools are. But and again, Honourable Sekiman spoke about giving a contract for somebody who qualifies for 15 million rands worth of work, because that's the capacity that he has. Is there a limit that is set for each supplier based on the information that is received, so that is avoided? So in other words, you can't have somebody, because he qualifies for 50 million, he gets 10 50 million rand contracts. You mentioned, Mr. Brown, the fact that there are some frivolous challenges. Now, does anybody, or can anybody and everybody, challenge the fact that they have not received a tender, or is there a fee that is attached to that? Because that might help in the event of frivolous challenges to ensure that not just everybody, because they've lost contract, but that they might just want to challenge. So, you know, is there some sort of control that would be implemented in that regard? Slide number 3, 4, 5, 8, Honourable Chairperson. Yeah, this is an interesting one. And, you know, using a the figure is always some sort of a guide, but you know, when you set a figure in this regard, as Honorable Sheikh Imam says, they are clever people, so what they are doing, then they know that in contract under 10 million will not be reviewed. So therefore what you do, then you just give them contracts of 9 million rand because they're not going to be reviewed. So what is going to be done with that report? But also, it's not only values that should be, maybe you must clarify this, I'm not describing. Would you also review contracts that certain suppliers are awarded? For example, we know there's a notorious family in South Africa that gets also the contract, the Guptas. You know, so would you, for example, look at specific families that are notorious and see whether their contracts are official and whether they are all in order? Slide number 10. That's the one that spoke about the 35 million per school. Okay, I know that's just a field given, obviously, and, you know, I mean, had a guideline, but surely if it's, that will depend on the size of, or the number of learners. So can we just get an idea, 35, what sort of number of learners will, or what school would you get for 35 million? Because as was indicated earlier, that we went to do oversight last year, and there were two schools, 84 and 85 million, you know, and it's scary that if that is the case, if that's the value of school, then how does one pay somebody 85 million for a school? Honorable Chair, I'm nearly done here. Slide number 17. Again, this is the second last bullet point, and that's where it talks about the total cost of ownership, etc. Schools must be built to last 100 years instead of high maintenance costs. Now, we talk about 10 years, I don't know. We saw, again, that's why I indicated yesterday, is that oversight is very important. You know, it's useless if we sit here and get information and do nothing with it. We went, there was a school that was just over a year old or a year old that had already required maintenance. So, you know, it's easy to say 10 years, but I think the standard that's been set, or some schools are only 1 year. And then my last slide, Honorable Chairperson, is the slide that deals with the challenges. Can I just ask the Chief Procurement Officer, because as I indicated in the beginning, I mean, it's a good instrument to use, but if it's not implemented properly, if there's no support and there's no poor communication and no consequence or non-compliance or those sorts of challenges, we need to solve that. We need to come up with a plan before we even implement this, because if those challenges still exist after 3 years, then surely the objectives that are set are not going to be achieved. Okay. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
All right, let's ask you to respond to those questions. Go ahead.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I hope you guys have taken notes. Eh? You must earn your travel to Cape Town. Maybe before I answer the question, because I just want to say something for the Honorable Members. We actually have over close to 1,000 procuring entities. Departments, provincial departments, their public entities, municipalities, their entities, and so you go. So think about it. It's quite a sizable amount, right? Now, I think we're getting close to the million transactions that we checked the last time a month that are going through the system, in different parts of the system. Right? So we've got thousands of tenders that actually get managed every day, for that matter. So if we think we will put a surveillance system that will cover each and every one, I think we've got a huge job ahead of us. Right? It's not going to be possible. What we're thinking when we put automation in place is to say, how do we at least have sight for many of these things in a very smart, in a very kind of smart way. So have that at the back of your mind when certain things happen. Let me give you an example. The tenders we're talking about in Plaza, which are over 10 million, they are about 200 then? Yeah, there was about 280, if I checked, contracts that are worth over 10 million. Just in Plaza. We've asked the same from what the Transnet. What? No, I just want to, in the case of Transnet, it was actually a thick document. Like, so if you look at the depth of the contracting, it becomes quite, you say, wow. You will not have be able to have an eye on all of that. And that's the reason why I say, you need to ask them, in these big departments, when you've got the board, what does the board do? When you have a CEO, what does the CEO do? Where is the supply chain head in this? What qualification does he have? What is it that he needs to report on a regular basis to the board? Because you need the institutions to work. Where we said we can put mechanisms in place and hope the institution will work. If we're going to do this, we will not be able to get anywhere with that stuff. So when we put things in place, that is our thought process. Now, it doesn't help you if you got some of the CEOs that would questionable, you know, I don't know what to use because I'm old here. So it's a problem. The people that we deploy in those places, we need to think carefully around it, and I'm frank around it. And that is a big chunk, actually, of our problem there. Right? Now, when we talk pricing, the point that I made, Honorable Sheikh Imam, was we can put a price referencing system in place, right? But to manage a price referencing system is problematic in itself, right? It is a capacity that you need in a department that to do market research. Those are people in Parliament. Somebody is doing procurement for Parliament. People who know, okay, we're buying food, we're buying this, we're buying that, we're buying that. They need to do market research. What are the prices of these things in Cape Town? You know, who are the suppliers that supply these things? And because you need to have people who are commodity specialists, category specialists, who understand quite a bit of that. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything. Let me give you an example. We went on a study tour to South Korea in December, right? That fateful December, right? And what happened there was very interesting. What the South Koreans do, and it will touch a number of the questions that you members have raised. Just to give you on where we are in space. They have discovered that suppliers don't pay their workers' salaries. Yeah? So you pay a supplier, but the supplier doesn't pay the salaries. It's a problem. They have discovered that you pay a guy who's got a contract with you, they don't pay the subcontractors. It's a problem. All right? They, has left. I just wanted to give another example. They have, even at the ward level, they know what the economy looks like at that ward. They will know where the brick, people who manufacture bricks, window panes, everything. I'm just using construction as an example. Right? Now, when they put the tender together, right, this is what they do. If they know they're going to build a school in that ward, they will immediately tell the tender, these are the people who will supply you with the inputs to build the school. They are in the locality. They are vetted. We put their prices, Honorable Sheikh Imam, all right, as well. All right? So they negotiated those prices for those people. Then they tell the guy who puts the tender together, when you put your tender in, you must tell us, you must use the prices that are already known, so that your price reflects what the economy in that area reflects. Then they will do their adjudication and eventually award, right? Now, when an invoice comes, when they've awarded the tender to you, they even tell you, give us a list of your workers who work for you. When an invoice comes, they first, before they honor the invoice, they already pay the workers. They've automated it. They pay the workers. The difference they give basically to you. If you were subcontractors, they want information relating to the subcontractor, they pay the subcontractor. So they say, you know, that's the only way in which you will control the economy fairly smartly. We are nowhere near that. Right? Even if you were to put price referencing systems in place, it will
be fairly artificial in some cases. Now where I say to myself, look here, in construction, you can do it because it's a quantity surveying for project. You will not, if I'm going to build a road, I need so much cement, so much asphalt, so much tar, so much dirt, and you can already know where the supply is. You can start to do a price referencing system basically for that. And then you can already indicate what department will be building roads. When you put your tender documents together, this should be reflected actually. So you use a price referencing system fairly differently related to that. So when we say, where can we use a price referencing system to have at least maximum impact? If you take the Department of Water there, to build a bulk pipeline is a fairly straightforward, I would think. So you would already know if you're going to use 500 diameter or 800 diameter pipes for it, you would know whether these pipes are PVC or steel. Right? You can do the costing of that information long before the time. So that if somebody comes and says an 80 kilometer pipeline is 500 million, you can say, no, but you are ridiculous. It should actually cost 300 million because you have already done your research yourself. Right? Now what we have picked up, which we are now putting measures in place, the behavior of the consulting engineers, the professionals, that's where we have a problem, we have discovered. Their fee structure is percentage-based. So that I'm going to build this building, go and design it. People design it. Now if you must be in 10% of it, if this building is going to be a million, he's going to get 100,000. But he will come back and say, oh, no, it must be 10 million. They hit a million out of it. The department gets that information from the consulting engineer. And then they assume that 10 million is the budget for this. So somebody comes, the point that you made, honorable member, somebody comes and comes with 999,000 for this tender. No. You are way too low. There's something wrong. You will not be able to make it. You see? So, where we sit now, we are at the final stages of putting a regime together on, regulating, but managing consulting fees, actually kind of properly. Because we've realized it's in that area that it has got a ripple effect, actually, on the system. So, there are tasks in the price referencing system that we think if we put our energy on it for now, we will get maximum. So I'm not dismissing the point that you are actually making. Who will be awarding tenders? We don't have the power to award tenders. Kenneth Pillay, relating to transversal contracts, he will have the power to make awards, right? But if a tender gets managed, let's say, by the city of Cape Town, they will use the CSD to verify whether these people are compliant in terms of certain things. But the decision to make, whoever makes the decision, remains basically with that particular kind of entity. So the system still remains decentralized in the way which we have described it. And the decision making related to that still remains actually like that. Now, on both the points that you've made, Honorable Fick and Honorable Shekima, you've got a CIDB system. Because the CIDB system must tell you that actually, given your capability, you can only do one up to that. Our conversation with the CIDB is to say, how do you monitor so that somebody may be capable of 50 but get 10 packages of 50? How do we track quite a bit of that? And I must say, I like many of the questions that are coming through, and my guys have taken notes, because some of the things we may not have thought through in the design of many of the things. So we will have to put in some of these things measures. I mean, if you talk about good behavior, we need to have whether it's a flag or something to indicate that this person is actually truly a good performer as you move there. The panel system, that's what you were referring to, where you've got a panel of 20 suppliers, but it's only these two guys that get the work all the time. In fact, many people are actually really upset about it, right? What I said to somebody who's dealing with governance, marketing, and compliance, we want to, and even these guys here, we want to have sight of all panels that exist. Now, we call them framework contracts.
It makes it fairly, in fact, it speeds up procurement if you think about it. If people know, look, we're going to be needing professional fees for ABC, they go out on a frame of contract, people respond, they evaluate, and they have it. But that needs to be reflected, whether it's on the e-tender portal. So that whenever an award takes place, we can start to see, but why is it that it's only this company from this panel that are getting this? So we're looking actually in that. Now, in addition to all of this, we're going to build a business intelligence unit. I'm going to try and get people with actuarial qualifications. Their job is just to sit on the e-tender portal and monitor patterns. Right? So that once we see certain patterns, we can actually take decisive action related to patterns. It's unfortunate that it's going to be a bit reactive. But that is going to be the nature of the business, and this is how we will actually approach it. Now, Honorable Sekima, if in fact this is what the committee may want to consider doing, go and visit the center in Madrid where we evaluate IPPs, the independent power producers. You will be shocked with what you see. Firstly, you come in. You don't have access to, you as a budget educator, the people who will be doing the evaluation and all that, you don't have access to your cell phone. You go through a security system where everything around you gets checked. When you get into a venue like this, it's recorded. It's even recorded voice. Alright? If you have a PIN and you communicate, everything actually gets seen related to flight. Alright? Now, my thought process is to say, is there a case to take that and replicate it in a number of provinces? So that certain infrastructure procurement and high-value procurement can actually be adjudicated and managed within a controlled environment, actually like that, so that we think about how we manage it. Now, why I say this, communication is really difficult. People talk among themselves, how are you going to manage it? People share information around certain business. It's reality. It's going to be difficult to police quite a bit of those things. Right? So I don't know, unless there are maybe suggestions now we can think about it, but it is going to be quite a bit tough. On the tender defaulters, my brother is not here, but on the tender defaulters, that's the reason why we've got the CSD. If you are found to have defaulted on a tender, the tender has been fraudulently awarded to you, you didn't perform on the tender, because people leave schools half built, and then they get tenders in some other places, people don't take action actually around it. Right? We're going to look at all of that. And then if, Sully there has visited a number of schools in Limpopo, where there was a furniture tender. The company did, some of the companies did. They just went to the school, in a sense. They took all the broken furniture, right? And went to go and just put new wood on it and all of that. In some cases, the screws are not even there. The quality of the wood is bad, and so you go. Right? But they charge you as if it's a new one. So you go. This is so now that we know who they are, we even said to the department, firstly, why didn't you detect it? Because your job is not to check these things, right? Circuit manager, you're responsible for a number of schools. You need to check that this will happen. But we put those companies on terms. We said to them, take all of this rubbish, go and fix the stuff. You're not going to get paid until such time that we get decent stuff that's actually in there, right? It's another opportunity. But as I've indicated to the members, in the bill, we're going to be decisive on how we're going to deal with defaulters. But we'll use the CSD, because if you then default, then you're out of the CSD and then you can't transact with government. Right. So we will start to make easy for departments who will be adjudicating tenders to have information around tender defaulters. Now, expose individuals who are doing the wrong thing. What we can do for the department, we can actually start to give you on a monthly basis, for the committee, on a monthly basis we can start to draw reports per department where there were complaints that came through, the nature of the complaint and that. And then we can basically start to share it with ourselves and then how do you use that to enhance oversight, to see that things are actually taken to their logical conclusion. What we're looking into now is, because for national and provincial government, on the payment system side, we've got access to it in the treasury. So we will know what's happening in the department and so we go, in terms of transactions and what gets loaded in terms of tenders that are awarded and so you go. But when it comes to public entities, we don't have sight of that. A public entity can transfer easily an amount of money into a company's book without us having sight of actually what happened. Do we need to have sight? I think so. So we're thinking about how do we put measures in place so that we start to have, even if it's just visual sight of what is happening within that, so that we can monitor particular trends related to that. Now there are many policies and regulations which rationalize a lot of that. The treasury regulations that the minister will be signing hopefully now and we will be implementing that is starting to rationalize a lot of the supply chain management environment. We're differentiating that with infrastructure procurement and how you need to manage infrastructure procurement. But pricing still remains the responsibility of an accounting officer. An accounting officer must ask themselves, let me give an example. We will be doing a particular assessment, a quantity that requires quantity surveyors. Right? We got a quotation for 807,000 to do this assessment. I looked at the quotation, I looked at people, I looked at the hours, the expertise, and all of it, and I said, no way. For the work that needs to be done, we shouldn't be paying more than 100,000. Right? We asked for a separate quotation. The quotation came at 98,000. Now, why do I give you this example? It's attitude. It's something change management is required within people to do it. If you're not going to do that, I mean, we will win the battle, but ultimately we will not necessarily go to the promised land where we want. Where we want to be. On the restriction side, the Honorable Member raised the issue around collusion. It all pains us with the fact that we have construction companies that feed the government billions of rand, and there was a consequence. They're still there doing business, actually, with the sex. But the responsibility to take that decision does not lie with office. It still lies, actually, somewhere else. And that's the reason why when we're going to craft the bill, we're going to say, how do you give those particular powers to the office so that they can start to really take action where action needs to be taken, because if you're going to leave it to the discretion of other people, that's not going to materialize. The tender system, let me be frank, I mean the tender system is here to stay. It will be impossible to ask how you differentiate between supplier to build a school. You need to have a system that says, I choose you. And that is the tender system. I don't think outside of that we will actually be able to kind of operate. But I know the point you are making. I know some of the points you are making. This is the resolution is one of them. If I get to dispute resolution, some of the problems is just cutting across the questions and the points that were raised. For certain tenders, you need a probity system. An external eye, they must actually just evaluate the process and be part of the process to make sure that whatever the decision that gets taken is in line with certain things, with our prescripts there. So over and above where we sit, in real time, how do you put a probity system in place? But you shouldn't now add too much cost to it. If you take how many thousands of tenders that get adjudicated, evaluated, and that, how do we fix the system is going to be important. Just talk about the security of the e-tender system, access to the central supplier database, how is it restricted, and how it works.
On the central server database, in terms of access, each and every supplier has access to their own profile. Only the supplier. So a supplier has a username and a PIN. So that PIN is quite important that they don't share it with other people. It's like a bank account PIN. So if you share it with other people, then people will be able to access your details. And from the practitioner's side, practitioners are only able to view supplier information. They cannot edit any information when it comes to the details of the supplier. Only a supplier is allowed to maintain the information. Currently, the previous system for registering multiple data, the officials had access within the form, and then they take a form there, and then the practitioner will update the details. Now we think the responsibility of maintaining information lies with the supplier. There is the supplier's responsibility to ensure that that particular information is correct. And I'll just talk about the other questions that were raised regarding the CSD. One was the bank account question. So how do you verify bank details? The bank details, we verify them across the different banks. If you say you're banking with this particular bank, we go to that particular bank and check the account details. But we send through the company registration information and the legal name of the entity. We ask the bank to tell us, does the bank account details match with that identification information of the business? If those match, we take that as the correct match, and that account is valid. So we do a particular check to ensure that we don't link incorrect accounts against different people. And also, with the bank account details, we also send OTP, the same way that your bank does, to the supplier. So for you to change your banking details, we send you an OTP. Once you confirm the OTP, then you can update the key details. So those are mechanisms that we have in place to make sure that only the people that have the right access can be able to see and update that particular information. And on the e-tenders portal, the departments and entities have access to upload the actual tender documents themselves. Or those ones that don't have capacity, they can also send their documents to the provincial treasuries or the national treasury, and then can be able to, those institutions help with uploading the tender information on the e-tender portal. But the big institutions that have a lot of tender, they administrate that information themselves and make sure that those are published there for people to be able to access. And also on the CAD, we have a very thorough audit trail. So each and every time any activity happens on the central supply database, we log each and every activity as to who logged in, from which particular IP address were they coming from. The IP address just indicates from which computer, where it's located, is it coming from a telecom service provider or who. So that information also is logged to a very, very detailed level. Because we're saying, also come audit time, when auditors come and audit the department, they can be able to go back in time and see, you use company A on this particular day. So it's a year later, so the auditor can come, can regenerate a supplier record to say, on this particular day, this was the concise information of this supplier, their details look like this. If it was changed by this particular user ID at this particular time, from this value to that value. So that also, we take up with on central supply database.
Thanks, sir. Honorable Lawman, you spoke about properties and leases. We are actually working closely with the Department of Public Works to do quite a bit of a detailed profile of the property portfolio that government owns, that government leases, etc. We're also looking at the tenure in which some of these departments were in those particular buildings at the end of the day. Now that will inform us which portfolio do we need to build ourselves and own, and which portfolio do we need to basically lease. And then there will also be a regime on the ones that we lease. There needs to be a specific protocol related to that, whether it's informed by the weather report on, you know, what are the pricing patterns in particular areas and all of that. We're looking at all of that currently. I mean, I keep on telling Solly that when I looked out of our building, I said, if I was a government and I had the authority and money to do the buying, I would buy many of the buildings that I see outside of there. Actually, just demolish them and rebuild them and have modern buildings basically today and actually own them at a far cheaper rate at which I'm leasing them actually currently. I'll even have green buildings, and so you go with the rest of that. So that is something I think if the committee even interacts with the Department of Public Works is to say, how do you fast-track that? Because ultimately it's within their domain to fast-track that. But we are actually interacting with them related to that. But in the interim, we will be talking to landlords and say, hi, you're getting at least 10 buildings from us. You see, you own a property in Clifton with 10 Ferraris and all of that. Can we reduce at least the rate on the side? So we will negotiate where we can because we've got contracts that are actually in place. But the point you're making is a good one. It is actually on our screen. On the travel side,
what I said to herself, and she nearly got herself into problems, but we're getting fairly close to it. What we want, similar to the central supply database, is a single travel IT platform, which is the same across the government. When people do their booking, it's uniform. So that we can start to check travel patterns. We can actually, without talking to a department, must be in a position to go into a department and already see where they travel, what was the size of the delegation, how much are they spending on a real-time basis. So that we can interact with the department, continue to know, but reduce this, do that, and so we go. So we are having a national travel policy that will come effective 1st of July to start to curtail quite a bit of that. But in the absence of technology, where you don't have sight of what's happening, you can't really control it. And this is where we are as a team in space to say how are we going to deal basically with that. The travel industry, it's a tough industry. We stay at the Townhouse Hotel now, we're paying 1,295 rand per night per individual per room. It includes dinner and breakfast. If you think about market conditions today, it's cheap. It's a very good rate, if you think about it. So that's the kind of thing where we look at travel, we look at it completely differently. But we also say, and this is where the members must think about it, for international travel, right? Those travels get approved by a minister. So it's the minister who decides what the size of the delegation must be. So it will be interesting if you look at departmental travel patterns and you look at international travel patterns related to that, then the questions can be asked differently to different people so that people can answer those questions actually directly. Honorable, I can see you're not getting easily excited. You're not as if I'm excited when we talk. But rest assured, when I started this job 3 years ago, in my first meeting with many of the practitioners that we've met, I told them that in 3 years time we will be where we are today. If you compare where we are today and where we were 3 years ago, it's chalk and cheese. It is chalk and cheese, right? And I told them that, and I said, if we are not at a stage in 3 years time, I'm prepared to resign. I met with them about a few months ago. All of our national CFOs and supply chain practitioners, and I asked them, if you guys were to evaluate me and give me a bonus, or decide where I must leave the job, where will you place me? They said, Kenneth, we never thought we would reach the stage. So I'm quite optimistic that we are actually moving. And what we presented to you now, we are implementing. It is not things that we are still thinking about. These conversations that we have with you honorable members is how do we refine? How do we fix them? Maybe, and there are a number of things that I may not respond to now that we have taken note of, which we will go back and say, but how do you, can the CSD help us with this? Can the ETA portal help us with this? Because we need to close the loop. So I am quite optimistic around it. When you've raised the issue around local suppliers and people that need to respond to it, the central supplier database is just it's a database where people who want to do business with the state get registered on. We don't decide of those people who get what things. It is so the darling municipality is there that uses the database to check what the people there that facilitate the transaction and that take their own local economy into account. It remains their responsibility. It is not our responsibility at the end of the day. So rest assured, even when we put national tenders together, we will put national tenders together in such a way that it takes local economies actually into account. Let's take a school furniture tender, for example. Right? A school furniture tender, think about it. Anybody can actually create a factory that manufactures school furniture. That's the simplest piece of work that needs to be done. Right? Now, you can even break it up per circuit or per school district. Because at the end of the day, currently we've got about 8 or 9 school furniture manufacturers. You can actually have 50 or 100 of them, for that matter. All that we will do in the case like, we will look at the designs, we will prescribe the material that must be used, we will cost it, and we will take into account economic dynamics, because the price in one part very different from a price in another part. And those things we can actually prescribe when we actually put it together. And we can tell a school and a school family within that area how to actually interact with that particular contract. So we said we're very mindful on how the local economy actually needs to be part of this. I would hate the situation where we put a tender together and the company from Gauteng gets it all the time. People from Eastern Cape don't get anything, Western Cape, and that will not work. But there are going to be certain commodities that lend themselves to something like that, where there are certain commodities that are, their domicile would be in maybe in the Western Cape or in KZN or in Gauteng. Right. There's nothing that you may do about it. But we will be very sensitive when we put the tail together. That we put it together in such a way that it doesn't disadvantage the economy of that location, basically, the 35 million, let me end with that. I mean, I may have missed a lot of other points. What we have done, the National Department of Education, they've drawn up plans in consultation with the education sector. And they propose about three sets of plans, where they say a school must look like this, whether it's a high school or primary school. And what we then have done, we've taken those plans, we've given it to a quantity surveyor. And I said, go through this plan and cost it, basically, for us, including professional fees and everything. Right? And out of that, we came with a model where we've counted all the break and everything, and then we came to, with a model that throws us at about roughly 35 million. Right? Now we go further and then we say, right, circumstances may differ from certain parts. It just assumes all soil conditions, for example, are the same. We could get into an area where it's problematic. You need reinforced foundations. It may be 10 million. But when you do that, you must actually get permission for the variation and stipulate how that would basically work. Now, if you were to visit 240 Maliba Street, where our offices are, there's a building that gets built there by a black construction company. It's 17,000 square meters. A school, on average, is 4,500 square meters, 5,000 maximum. That building for 5,500 square meters, rent a square meter. The building is 400 million. 17,000 square meters. And I was asking, if these guys can build this for 100 million, how much do they build? They said, Kenneth, we can build a school for 130 million. We can do that. But why is it that it happens? You see, if we become too rule-based, we prescribe, it will take us up to a point. But we need to give you information that lists all the schools, the sizes of the schools, and the prices that we paid, so that if these things become public, people will find it difficult to start to hide their issues, because then they must explain why this has happened. And if there's a cogent reason for it, there needs to be consequence. There needs to be consequence. And if there's no consequence, we will just continue basically to talk. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Is there any other things you guys would have must maybe?
Maybe I can
do it. What exciting.
You've missed one on the access of small businesses to CST, which we use the feeder office, the Village Post Office. And then we missed the issue on the use of consultants to review the tenders about 10 million. And then the co-tenders as well. And then the list for the 40 transversal contracts, do we have it on the website over there?
On that, I mean, there are a list. The members have asked for information. We've noted the list. That information, we will say. We've got a call center for registration of the CSD. So if you are struggling somewhere and you can't, you can call us. And I've given these guys a turnaround time of not more than 24 hours to solve the problem. And we're trying to stick basically to that.
Wait, let's
Okay, and then also in terms of support for suppliers, especially the small ones, we're saying in our communities, we also have a Tucson service center. We understand it's not all of them that are actually connected, but the ones that are also, that are online, they can be used also to assist the small suppliers to be able to access the CSD and even the portals. And remember also, the departments currently where they're submitting forms, they will no longer be submitting forms there, but there's still practitioners there in SCM. So those practitioners also, we need assistance so that the departments will not be pushing our suppliers away. They should assist them to be able to register themselves on CSD if they need assistance, including the municipality. So all the government centers that are currently procuring, they will also be able to provide assistance to anyone that wants to register on the CSD and they don't have the particular capacity. Provincial treasuries and other departments, they go out in campaigns, they go in the far most rural areas to also assist the suppliers in registering themselves on the CSD. What is good with the CSD is once a supplier is on the CSD, they are on forever, unless if some of the information changes in a particular way, but they'll always be there. They won't have to go anywhere else. And for performance management, it's one of the issues that was indicated. Going forward with the CSD and e-procurement, what we'll be bringing on board is performance management. If a particular supplier did a good work somewhere else, then departments will be able to write any change that this particular supplier did well. And also, if they deliver late and so on, then there'll be that particular 360 degree. Also, a supplier can come back and say, this particular department, I do business with them, and they don't treat me well, they request services late, and expect me to deliver quickly, and so on. So those are some of the things that we see CSD to be going to go into. Spend analysis for us to see where the money is going so that you can see who are we paying most of the time. Even if we pay a particular supplier either by code, then we should be able to get feedback on the CSD to say supply agencies on the CSD, they've been used and paid by this particular department this much. Then over time, as a treasury, we'll be able to run reports and data analytics to see where is the money going, are we supporting local businesses, is the policy of government working, cooperatives and all those. So it will help us in a great deal in terms of policy making as well.
So before you come in fact, Honorable Chair, to help my team and myself, you may want to consider, you may want to consider maybe inviting a sprinkling of suppliers, service providers, so to interview them and say, are you aware of the thing? You know, does it help you the way Kenneth glorifies it? And so you go, so that you make an independent assessment actually around it. And it would be interesting if you can get the feedback around it. That it could be that there are certain things that we must, that come through. But I think it's an opportunity for you to check whether we are actually doing the right thing here. And we're open to that. That will help us immensely. Honorable Lowe, you were saying I'm using consultants. And yeah, we can have the department use consultants. You know, we've used $2 million and a few consultants to put up the CSD. It cost us $8 million. We saved the state with experts using them smartly. That saved a lot of money. The e-tender portal, right? I didn't answer you on that. The e-tender portal, we paid 0 cents for it. We used the same contact and people to design it for us. We're just paying a hosting fee at CETA for 16,000. But we buy our own server and we're going to move it actually on where we sit. I think we spend roughly about 20 million on the consultants, a number of the consultants that we have there. But that's all clear. They must save us a lot of money. I'm not a very good negotiator. I don't know how to go to the construction industry and negotiate a contract. So I get somebody who knows the business, I'm prepared to pay him, but I want to see a reduction in the contract price. So how I approach consultants is completely different from how some people... I don't use consultants to substitute me, to do my work. People employ people, and then they employ consultants to do the people that they've employed for their work. That is not actually where we sit in terms of our approach. Sorry?
Thanks, Ken. I wanted to just clarify the 10 million one that was talked about is a figure that is applicable to public entities when we review. But if we receive a complaint of a certain tender, even if that tender is 100,000 in that public entity, we do review. For other entities, when we do the review, we are not looking at the amount. I wanted to clarify that one. Then the section 272 of the Constitution say
currently we have a bill that Kenneth talked about, but there are a number of interim reforms that we are looking at. The 2011 preferential procurement regulation is going to be amended very soon. It's just with legal and the minister. Immediately he signed it. He's going to introduce a number of reforms in the interim, and we are waiting for the procurement bill.
But on that, on Empowerment 217, I mean, we relied on the triple PFA to do that part, all right? Now, yeah, we there's quite a bit of a radical change that we actually trying to think about. We will actually look at targeted procurement. We will clarify how, for example, women, people with disabilities and all of that must be treated in the regime, how blacks must be treated in the regime, and say blacks, all previously disadvantaged individuals, say how they need to be treated there. So all of that we actually going to be clarifying. And actually, we have interacted with black business, and they have given us proposals on how we need to think some of those things actually through. So I think we are fairly close to where we want to be. You just want to talk about he interacts with SALDA and local government. He talks to each and every municipality. He spoke now yesterday with the city of Cape Town, and he's going to Stellenbosch when we're done here.
Okay. Thank you for Mr. Chair. What we have done in the office, first we started in national and entities, and we earmarked that the local government will go join the CSD and the ETA on the 1st of July. So the past 3 months, we have met with all SARA through their provincial structures, which is municipal finance, which are headed by politicians. And recently, the chief met with also SARA CEO as part of a consultation. We have also met with the unions, IMATU, for instance, and also they are in. We're only left with SAMU. As part of our engagement, but we have already told them what is the vision in terms of the reform. So the target plan is that by the end of April, maybe the 1st of May, we've got 17 non-delegated municipalities, which include 8 metros. So already yesterday we met with the city of Cape Town. They are already on board in terms of the CSE, because the benefit that we showed them is one, the localization, because they want to do what you call a ward-based procurement for procurement of less than 80,000, because they want to benefit their local people. But they have developed an Excel spreadsheet, which is a database, and when we show them to say, no, you don't have to do that, because what you're going to happen is what you call it a memorial database, where people are going to come to you with invoice to say, but you need to procure from this gentleman. So in order to assist you, because the CSD, it is on a what level. What you need to do from a local economic development purposes, what you call supplier day, and then you register your suppliers at what. You make sure that actually you've got 3 suppliers at each what. They've got about 24 system. From there, when you want to procure, when the mayor wants to go at Lang, at what 24, because our system is customized in that way, let's go into the system and get the caterer from what, in that what. And then send them the RFU, and then the year when it goes, they can say, we have appointed this provider from this area. So this is what we have done so far as the officers.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much. Let me allow for a few more questions. Concise, no preambles. Honorable Sheikh Imam, Honorable Law, Honorable Manana, Honorable Sheila Shepherd-Stone.
Very sensitive topic, Chair, you know. Without preamble, you're not doing justice. thank you, Mr. Brown. In terms of your publication, we see that your SCM expenditure for national is only 7%, and the provincial is 27%. Maybe if you can tell us what is the local governments you are spending on supply chain. And the other thing is, with all the good ideas and the fantastic things you have said, how are you going to actually enforce this or encourage the local government to buy in and do exactly the same thing what you are doing at nationally? Because I think it really will make a difference. And if you don't get their buy-in, and you know for a fact the challenges we have is that there's no consequences, nothing is going to happen. Maybe you must also tell us of all the good things. What do you see as the loopholes in this entire thing that you presented to us that we have to worry about, that we may, it might be challenge for us. And now, you know, we spoke about defaulting businesses, but the guys are so good at the system. I know if a guy was getting money, and you know, you can't do business with the state, all he did is remove himself from that thing. It doesn't mean he's not getting the money. All he do was a business, but I will put it onto his wife name, and some of us have many wives. I don't have any, but they take, you know, they put into the wife, they put into girlfriend, they put into family members, and then they still do business even though it's default. I don't know. That to you is going to be a kind of task to be able to identify. Would you have a mechanism in display in your entire system to report, like, if there's not payments within 30 days? So automatically the relevant department that deals that you can send it to, whether it's the Treasury and Appropriations or whatever it is, immediately it must kick off in your system to say, listen, there's a warning alert, there's a problem, these are the municipalities, these are the ones that are not paying supplies. Because remember, we put other structures in to go oversee and make sure people pay their 30 days, they're still not paying it. So a system. At the same time, you will also identify challenges we have in supply, not being able to get the products on time, not enough people to manufacture them. Will you also in the same system be able to have an alert and send them out to trade and industry and things? Listen, I think we need to create an industry in that. We need to create an industry. We can't get the pipes. Why don't we create an industry? We have the expertise. You know, things like that, so that you'll also be educating the other structures so that we can all work together to try and achieve them. Would you not think that we should encourage the system of what you just explained to us about Korea, where, you know, what I find is, up to now, the rich are still getting richer, poor are still getting poorer. How do you redistribute this wealth? In other words, I'm saying, if you, somebody is manufacturing something in the Cape Metro, then it should be encouraged that people from the Cape Metro region, businesses and things, they should be encouraged to be the one that should be, anymore, should be given preference. Maybe we need policy to that effect, so that we will distribute this. So if you've been building in other areas, encourage people for those areas. We'll be lifting up those communities, creating more jobs in the community. Because what you find is, a lot of these tenders, the very same people win these tenders all the time. Very, very few. Now, I'm going to tell you, I was speaking to a guy who manufactures stationary products. Believe me, he's just as poor as he always was, but he's one of the biggest manufacturers. You know what? The middleman is making all the money, and you're correct. They don't pay this for contractors. They don't pay these people. They collect it. This guy waits. He doesn't get his money. But he's the one that's doing the dirty work and making stuff. So your system wants to also pick up. Are these guys really the guys that are manufacturing the stuff? Or they are just the middle people making money at the expense of the others? So that's what happens. Maybe your system needs to. So you know, when we talk about travel, you know, I must say that even if we get a discount, sometimes it doesn't mean anything. If you look at the high prices of travel, even in the country domestically, it's very easy to push up the prices and then give you a discount of 20%, 25%. Do you not think that maybe we need an in-house, like Parliament Travel, that's a fantastic job. And I'm telling you, some of the travel agents that we use, you'll be shocked at the service that they give us. But use them. You make one call after 5 o'clock, 300 per call, just to even change your flight. You know, so, I don't know, you know, in terms. I don't know whether we can have time, but I've got another, 22, 26 verses, but I don't know whether, and I think we don't have time, and I think it's not fair to my other colleagues. But the other big problem that
we see... Submit in writing.
Okay, all right. But very quickly, another problem that we have, which costs us a lot of money, is disuse on tenders. Now, maybe we need to cover that in your tender document somewhere, in our thing. So that people just don't put in dispute, the entire process is delayed, they may lose it. But what did it do? It cost us a lot of money and a lot of time. How do we close that gap so that we don't really have that problem? You're saying, I'm suggesting here that I must stop. Is that what you're saying?
I have to say there are a couple of pages of...
Yeah, there's not the 26, but there's not 45. But, okay, the CIDB is another challenge for me. Let me tell you what I've identified here. Very serious problem. A guy's got a CIDB rating of GB2. Okay? Let me tell you what happens. Then he goes and does a joint venture with somebody who got a GB3 or GB5. Automatically after the job, he's done nothing really to the job. Automatically after the job is over, he jumps from a GB2 to GB3. The GB2 he has, plus the GB5 of the joint venture that he did. Now he comes to GB7, which now giving capacity to 50 million or 70 million, 100 million, but you don't have the capacity. Don't have the knowledge, is not able to do the job. That is the other problem that we have. Fine. Let me, I think, stop there for now and give my other colleagues a chance. But yes, we'll put it in writing and I'm convinced we'll get a result. But finally, I want to say, I think I want to be optimistic. It is a fantastic job. And I think if this implemented, and it's support from all of us, I think it's going to go a long way. Maybe not 100%, but I think 50% of our battle will be won. We'll save a lot of money. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also going to submit a few in writing because once it was shaking, I took most of our time. How do I put this? I understand what the office wants to do, this particular office of the Chief Procurement Officer, and I would like to stay optimistic, but it's very, very difficult on his last statements that he's made on the questions that I've asked. Why? Number one, for me, I think they have just taken over the administrative part of the tender system. Because Mr. Brown has said the decision-making doesn't lie with them. And it's within the decision-making where the corruption are happening. And if that role doesn't lie with his office, then somewhere we wouldn't win the battle in what they have presented. Because I would have expected that the role of decision-making should lie within his office and not with municipalities. Because it's easy to say just to put in a tender of this amount and that amount and then put it through the portal and I will make the decision. So I still believe that we'll still face number of problems. The office don't have enough bites. I think it's the minister have to reverse the whole, have to revise the whole role of the office itself and what they want to accomplish. But as it stands now, it's not going to accomplish what they want to accomplish, in my view. Because too many individuals still come to FOPA for hearings and so forth. We had other time correctional service where this gentleman was there when we had, I think, PRASA or some other entity that we were having there also for a hearing. And nothing are happening to those individuals. So what do we want to achieve by having an office, but the office don't have enough bite to say, for instance, that they take individuals to task, with especially government officials that are doing business with the state and are inflicting prices and so forth. So really for me, I think my whole excitement just went out of the window about the whole system. It's not going to work as it stands now. The office needs more power. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Manana. Honorable Manana and then Honorable Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the report. It was an eye-opener, you know. I was listening very carefully to find out exactly what are they going to present. Chairperson, you know, once the presentation with regards to the travel and accommodation, you talked about the air traveling, but the land traveling, because I have noted that there's so much corruption on that issue, you know. I know some of the officials who are claiming exorbitant amount, and most of the time they are on road, they're not in the offices, they're not doing anything in order for them to pay for the traveling. I know of some of the officials who were claiming 40,000 to 50,000 per month, per month, and at the end of the month they are going to get their salaries. yesterday there was a presentation with regards to telecommunication, whereby we were told that in the third quarter of last year they have failed to utilize their money on the ball pen. Yes, they have only managed to use 5.5% of their budget. Precisely because of the tender problem, I don't know whether are you aware of it and how can you assist with that regard. Thank you very much.
Honorable Shopestone.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think this is a very useful document, and the presentation was very enlightening. And you know, I'm getting my salary this week. I've decided after your presentation that before the end of next week I'll have registered for this course, procurement management, because I used to undermine it, but I can see that, you know, if we can be, the committee can be glued up in this procurement issues, we can actually assist you guys to do what you want to do. I am convinced that what you have put on paper and your judging from your enthusiasm, you are going to assist the state to get better. But you know, I'm worried about smaller municipalities. You might come from Limpopo. Tenders go out, and tenders get are usually given to the same people. And unfortunately, there's this tendency of them not paying the workers. They are the people that they employ to do the work. And I thought, you know, when government came up with this, giving people tenders, it was part of poverty alleviation. But I don't see it coming that way. I see a few people getting richer and richer by the day, and other people becoming poorer and desperate. So I would like you to do, I don't know whether it is done in your sphere of engagement, case study on small municipalities, especially in Mopani. It's terrible. It is even known, you know, it's not something that people gossip about. It's known that the tenders in this municipality is close to Sheila. They know me, and they even now respect me for that. And it is even known that I'm very rich. You know, things like that. You know, if people are so corrupt to a point where they just have no shame, you know, it is terrible. That is one. Two, this issue of paying small contractors on time. You know, I know of quite a number of small contractors who have gone bankrupt. It is really killing our local economies, because, you know, with the small businesses, if you don't pay them even for 2 months, they're gone, they're out. And there's no way they're going to find us. And you know how difficult it is for poorer communities to get loans from the bank. They don't have that opportunity. So I'm just pleading with you to just look at that. Payment of smaller contractors on time, and a case study of the small municipalities, especially in Mopani, because you won't struggle, because people know who gets the tenant, and those people don't hide it. Maybe they might, if you tell them you come from the chief procurement office, they will hide it. But if you can just say, oh no, I'm just a visitor from Johannesburg, you'll get them. They'll tell you, I'm in charge here. Yeah, they come to me, and everybody respects me here. Yeah. You know, we can't
allow corruption to reach such levels. Lastly, I would plead with you, Chairperson, that you arrange maybe after the election, because I don't think my friend will have, my beloved friend doctor will have time. He will be very busy. I want him to be present in the workshop, to arrange a workshop for this committee, so that we come to the same understanding on these issues. As I'm saying that I'm serious, I'm going to register for this course, and I think it will serve our country very well. Thank you.
Yes, please offer some response.
I'll try to be very brief, Honourable Chair, because the toilet is also calling me. Honourable Law, let me really summarize. You've got the constitution, and you've got the decentralized fiscal system, which is embedded in the constitution, which gives particular power and functions to each sphere of government. So whatever we put together needs to be within the confines of that particular constitution. So that is how we actually operate. But it doesn't mean the point that you are making is not a valid one to say, but how can we inspire confidence with the level of corruption that's there? What we need to look at, and this is where committee must also help us, is to say, why is it that institutions are not working properly? There's an institutional problem. We can cosmetically help you with things, but if the institutions are not working, let me give you an example. You've got risk committees and you've got internal audit committees in every entity. Are they doing their work? You see? So centralizing tenders up here does not solve that problem. It's those institutions that must work, and that's where we need to get to at the end of the day. Honorable Shopenstoli and Honorable Shekima, you're talking about 30-day kind of thing, payment problem. It is a serious problem. I mean, I had a black-owned company come to me saying, Kenneth, I've been owed in the Eastern Cape 100 million rand. If I don't get paid within the next 2 weeks, I'll have to close down my operation, and I'll have to retrench 2,500 workers. And all the subcontractors that benefit from my business will also run out of business. We then intervened and assisted that company. And out of that, I said to Rahadi, I'll take over the manager. I said, we need to actually have a call center for 30 days, which is not the one that is in the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. We want to do it web-based. A company that's not being paid within 30 days must upload the invoice for us. We must get it immediately. Somebody in the office must look at it and say, which department is there? They must move it to that department. We're busy with the circular. They said, if that invoice comes to me, within 10 days it must be resolved. If it is not resolved, that entity, we're not going to transfer money to it, that department. Even if it's with that department's pencil. Because we need to be draconian related to that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, we will generate reports. We will generate reports so that we give the reports to you and publicize them in the media. To say, these are the delinquent departments. They haven't been paying people. So that people start to really deal with the people who've got the authority to make those particular payments there. Moving forward, Honorable Shekima, we have finalized our integrated financial management system tender. We've made an award. We've contracted all of it. Part of it is going to interface with the bank system that we have here and with the payment system so that you bring in a bit of automation in the payment cycle. Because currently what happens with payments is the payment is legitimate, it must be made. But it can't be made if there's no brown envelope in exchange. So how do we think through that is where we are actually in space to deal with that. Now, part of why we want to have the capital acquisition plan of all departments and the procurement plans and all of that, and they aren't going to employ people, is to do business intelligence. They can go in there and, let me give you an example. Government consumes 85 million condoms. Not consumed there, but except distributes a month. So a billion condoms, male and female condoms per year. It's a 3.5, it's a 1.1 billion tender a year. It's a 3.5 billion a year. My goodness, 3.5 billion a year. 95% of that is import. Now, you say, but here we could have had maybe 10 condom factories. We would have created so many jobs. So we're generating the information now to be able to interact with trade and industry and say, how do we grow the economy smartly? On travel, Honorable Malana, on the land travel part, but again, it is how the department manages its business. It gives permission for people to travel. It must manage its assets, even the cars that they use and all that. That's the responsibility of that particular institution. No system is going to help us with the problem that you've actually characterized. So whilst one is very alive to raise the very good suggestions that comes to here, where I say which parts are actually part of my and my team's responsibility where we can help. But we also go back to broader treasury and say, there are these parts that have been highlighted. You at Dondo Mohajan yesterday, here at DDG, right, for public finance. We go back to him and say, no, there are these parts that has come up here. When you interact with your department, you must talk to them about some of the things. So there is quite a bit of robust interaction among the different branches of the treasury to make many of these things happen. But if we don't focus in building efficient institutions, we will really be bogged down. And service delivery will continue to suffer if we focus on those, on many of us, on many of the things. You know, the workshop idea, Honorable Shobhasitole, I think it is a great idea. In fact, what we may want to consider, and we'll talk, I mean, with our office there, is that maybe what we need to do, because this is a rich conversation. Now, what's going to happen to me, next week I'm going to be called by another committee. I'm just going to explain it again to the same committee. Is there no way where we can convince something where all the committees actually come together? And then we workshop it. And then even the questions that you've raised, we start to even start to answer quite a bit of that. That will really, really help us, basically, where we sit. But in the interim, Honorable Chair, through you, is whatever other things are that the committee members feel like they can enforce on to improve the system, please, we want those particular kind of suggestions so that we really move the system forward. Maybe I must just conclude because I need to get to the rest of but appoint this guy, he will take over, Honorable Chair. Yes, I must again apologize for not having sent the presentation earlier on. And I really put it on record, actually, that should this happen, you must be the first one writing the file letter to say you are actually dismissed. And I really sympathize and agree. Unless I want to lose my job and I do deliberately. But thank you very much for this opportunity. Can I just be excused?
Yes, Honor Pacific.
I announced the Brown as guest today, but I think he's okay. I would ask him, the other directors, to convey the message. It's very important, Robert, that any of the contractors, any businesses that don't get paid within 30 days, is willing to let his office deal with it. So could we have that number published somewhere? The number that can be contacted by the suppliers who have not been paid within 30 days, because that's the offer that was made. So I think it's important that he knows that number, but the suppliers don't have that number.
I think yes. Just let us know if that is possible. I had you talking about the call center, but perhaps this is a lot more urgent, because as we speak, there are defaulting departments and entities.
Okay, thank you, Chef. The reason why we are planning to launch it on the 1st of May is we're trying to develop a system where suppliers all over the country don't have to send the documents manually to us. They can just go into the treasury or any other office and upload them, and then they will come through to us immediately, and then we disseminate them. At the moment, we're still working on the web system. Once it's done, we're targeting for 1 May. And then we'll announce everything on the media as well as through the CSE to say, if you're unpaid, this is how you load your information, and then we direct this to the right department.
Yes, thank you very much.
I expect you realize there are very high expectations from yourselves. Especially because there are three quick things that must come through in the work that you're doing. The first is obviously you are facilitating government tenders in order to improve and ensure and improve timely and service delivery. Now, this becomes important, especially on the construction, the infrastructure, the government infrastructure built program with huge budgets. And the complaint from the private sector and from everyone else that the tenants are coming out very slow. So that becomes very critical. Of even equal importance is lower ability to eliminate altogether corrupt practices and improve efficiency in the system. And importantly, thirdly, the role of this office in contributing to better implementation of empowerment. I see you have made note of it here, which is very important. We'll be watching that because we're interested in accelerating inclusive growth, creating jobs, and growing the economy. And we think that your cooperation with DTI on the triple BE question, Economic Development Department and the Department of Small Business and Business Development is going to be very important, just on this economic area of your work. The critical point that is being made is the issue around the awarding of tender, the decision-making part of it. If that is located in your offices at the national level, maybe we should see that decentralization being replicated in the same manner to the provinces, same structure, same information, and so on, and perhaps look at how you rope in the municipalities so that you begin to close the gaps, and obviously at the beginning it may not be watertight, but what becomes critical as well, and I don't know how you are playing into this space, but where your system seems to let through some of the corrupt practices, how does an ordinary person get through to yourself and say, we think there was corruption in this particular awarding of the tender? Can you have a look at it? And so that you also have a buy-in from others. You know, as we do, that people are just simply tired of corruption. Simply tired. I wish I could use this other popular word, it sounds like Afrikaans. But that is how tired people are of corruption. Doesn't matter where it comes from. People are simply tired. They want to get rid of it. And then that's why I'm saying there are very high expectations from our people. There are very high expectations from people who are doing business with government, be they private, be the private business sector or public sector. High expectations, because people have been shortchanged, as you have heard members say here. Shortchanged such that some businesses are dead,
Some businesses have gone very big. Some individuals have gone very rich. The others have gone very poor. So there are high expectations. And we think that you are up to the task. Don't disappoint us. But you have our support from this particular committee. Thank you very much for your presence here today. We look forward to further engagement with yourselves. Honourable members, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Copy of the presentation, please. Thank you.